Good morning. We'll call to order the October 15th, 2024 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District Hearing Board meeting. And if you'd all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And if we could have a roll call, please.
Member Johnson.
Here.
Member Reddy.
Present.
Member Vesely.
Here.
Member Lapidus.
Here.
Member Anders.
Here.
Okay, item number three, we'll do an election for the hearing board vice chairman. I'll take a motion for somebody who would like to step up and take this honorable position.
I'll step forward.
Okay.
Someone wants to be vice chair.
I'll move for Mr. Reddy to be vice chair.
I second.
And
ready for a
roll call vote, please.
Motion to appoint Member Reddy as the vice chair of the APCD Hearing Board. Motion is made by Member Vesely, seconded by Member Anders. Member Johnson.
Yes.
Member Reddy.
Abstain.
Member Vesely.
Yes.
Member Lapidus.
Yes.
Member Anders.
Yes.
Motion passes 4-1 abstention.
Okay, and congratulations, Mr. Reddy.
Item
number four, if the board members have had a chance to review the minutes from the October 13th, 2024 hearing board meeting.
Move to approve the minutes as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we should open for public comment as well.
Okay. We'll open now for public comment. Seeing no one interested in making a public comment, we'll move on to item number five.
Oh, we need a roll call vote on the minutes as well.
I'm sorry. A roll call vote then on.
So a motion to approve the minutes of the October 13th, 2023 APCD Hearing Board meeting. Motion is made by Member Reddy, seconded by Member Vesely. Member Johnson.
Yes.
Member Reddy.
Yes.
Member Vesely.
Yes.
Member Lapidus.
Yes.
Member Anders.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, we'll continue on with item number five, a progress report on activities called out in stipulated order of abatement, case number 17-01. And first, we'll start off an introduction by the...
Mr. Chairman, could I
yes.
make a brief announcement? I just want to inform the panel that I met with Mr. Carl Tupper in July for the purpose of just becoming up to date and informing and answering technical questions and discussion. I just wanted to... Inform the panel that I did that. So, thank you.
Has there been any other board members with communication with Ms. Taffer? Okay, thank you. So we'll go to the introduction by the Mr. Willie.
Good morning, Gary Willie, Air Pollution Control Officer. Today we'll be doing a first workshop in our annual report and work plan that's produced by State Park with consultation with the hearing board and the district. Prior to approving or conditionally approving the annual report and work plan, we hold this public hearing, we take comment, and we take comment and direction from the hearing board as well. And after that, should we make the decision, which is likely that we'll approve it, we'll conditionally approve it with some conditions developed from comments and things that need to be cleaned up that weren't necessarily in the plan. So that's part of the powers of the order for the Air Pollution Control Officer to approve the final plan. So, like I said before, the 2024 AWRP was developed by State Parks in conjunction with the SAG. One thing I wanted to get back to is after the hearing, we'll discuss and in the hearing to have modify the order itself, but that's a separate item. So we'll talk about it somewhat in this revision, but it is a separate public hearing to revise the order. So first off, you'll hear from John O'Brien, the State Parks Project Manager, who will cover the RWP development. Then you'll hear from Dr. Bernie Bauer, the chair of the SAG, who will speak on their input and their determinations. And then Carl Tupper was to do his presentation, but he got sick in the middle of the night last night, so you're going to have to hear me bear through it. Luckily, I think I have some of his notes in there, and I can understand most of it. From then, we'll move on to public comment, followed by hearing board questions and comments. And with that, I'd like to introduce John O'Brien, who will go over the ARWP for 2024.
Thank you, Mr. Willie. Good morning, Hearing Board. I'm John O'Brien, and I will be giving an update on the Oceana Dunes SVRA 2024 Annual Report and Work Plan. So as we know, the stipulated order of abatement, it was amended in 2022 with an updated air quality target to eliminate emissions in excess of naturally occurring emissions that contribute to downwind violations of the state and federal PM10 air quality standards. The Scientific Advisory Group, or the SAG, developed an excess emission framework to quantify emissions in excess of naturally occurring emissions. That proposal was finalized by the SAG with feedback from Parks and the APCD and submitted on December 19th of 2023. State Parks submitted a concurrence letter on January 16th of 2024, and the APCO, Mr. Willie, approved it on February 8th of 2024. Dr. Bauer from the SAG is here, and he'll go into more detail, but it had three main components, and he'll go into the details. It did include a new zonation of ODSVRA to characterize the emissivity of the different zones, and then it used all the PICERL data, all the emissivity data from 2013 to the present, and then there were some important statistical differences that he'll get into. But the basis of the excess emission framework is comparing the mass emissions from a pre-disturbance scenario to the mass emissions of a current scenario. And the pre-disturbance scenario is based on the emissivity of the non-riding area overlaid on top of the riding area, and then with the vegetation coverage from 1939. And then the current scenario is the emissivity of the riding area by zone with the vegetation coverage from 2020. And the vegetation coverage is based on a UC Santa Barbara analysis. So this is just a depiction of the different zones. You can see on the left the pre-disturbance scenario. There are three different zones. And again, that's based on the emissivity of the non-riding area. And then on the right, you can see the current emissivity zones. And there are multiple different zones. And it's the emissivity of each of those zones. And then this is just showing all of the emissivity measurements from 2013 to 2022. And the big take-home note is there's a lot of data informing this framework. So compliance with the SOA, as I said, is based on a modeled mass emission target. And the mass emissions represents the total emissions coming off the dunes. And then, as I said, the mass emissions from the pre-disturbance is then compared to the current scenario. So the initial results that were reported in the 2024 annual report and work plan had a pre-disturbance mass emissions of 166 metric tons per day and a current mass emissions of 148 metric tons per day. So with the current dust mitigation projects in place, the initial results indicate that the emissions coming from ODSVRA are not in excess of naturally occurring emissions. Next steps, there has been a full emissivity campaign in 2024, similar to 2013 and 2019. The majority of the measurements were in the spring of 2024, and then the remainder were in September of 2024 in the shorebird, the nesting restriction areas. And these were completed by the Desert Research Institute. And there are other model refinements that were identified during the excess emission process. And the data from the emissivity measurements will be entered into the model, and that will update the both the predisturbance and the current results. And that will be reported on in the 2025 annual report and work plan. And then there's ongoing other air quality monitoring efforts on the dunes as well. So when, just real quick, when we do talk about emissivity measurements, we're talking about this portable in-situ wind erosion lab, or PICE swirl. And you can see the equipment on the beach here. This is developed by the Desert Research Institute. And at a basic level, it's a blade on the inside that mimics different wind speeds, and then it measures the PM emissions coming off the surface of those different wind speeds. And this data is entered, it's analyzed and entered into the model, and that's how we come up with the mass emissions. And so this is just the locations of the different measurements. In 2024, there were over 400 measurements, both inside and outside of the riding area. So the question that comes up is how we're talking about modeled mass emissions, and compliance with the SOA is based on these modeled mass emissions, but how does this translate to downwind air quality concentrations measured at CDF, measured at MESA 2? And it's the question, we have been working with the Desert Research Institute to develop a metric that allows us to compare one year to the next. What this is showing is the wind power density, the relative windiness at the S1 tower, which is one of the monitoring stations on the dunes. And what you can see, basically wind power density is the measure of the wind energy for a period of time. And what you can see here, this is 2011 to 2023, it's variable from one year to the next, as we all know. 2020 was a very high wind year. 2019 was a very low wind year. So how do we compare the PM10 concentrations from one year to the next, given how variable the wind is? So the Desert Research Institute developed this metric of total PM10 measured, in this case it's at CDF, by the total wind power density measured on the dunes. And what this does, essentially what this does, is it standardizes the measured PM10 concentrations, so we're able to compare one year to the next. And so what you can see on the left-hand side of the screen, you can see 2013 at the top. The x-axis is essentially zero acres of dust mitigation at that point. And then as you move to the right, you can see 2023 is the red dot, and you can see there's been a steady decrease in the measured PM10 concentrations as the acres of dust mitigation have increased. And so what this is doing is showing the relative efficacy of the different dust mitigation projects. And this is just one metric. The APCD uses other metrics that they'll go into. So the PM10 mitigation projects at ODS-VRA are having a positive impact on downwind PM10 levels and air quality. The excess emission framework and the results, that was the primary focus of the 2024 annual reporting work plan, the ARWP. State Parks also plans to convert 12.3 acres of past straw treatments to native dune vegetation, and then do supplemental planting on 28.9 acres of past vegetation projects. So at the end of this planting season, all of the temporary projects will have been converted to vegetation. And then to date, there's 740 acres of dust mitigation projects, and that includes the 293-acre nesting enclosure, which has been closed year-round for the past several years. And this just shows a map of the location of the different projects. The areas, the purple polygons are the dust mitigation projects. And then you can see at the top of the screen, the green is the 12.3 acres of a past straw treatment. And then the black stripes, that's the 28.9 acres of supplemental planting. And then the plover exposure is along the beach on the southern part of the park in the lime green. So there is, as I said, there's ongoing air quality and geomorphology monitoring on the dunes to ensure we're using the best available information to inform this program. So these are the PICE swirl, the emissivity measurements. There will continue to be emissivity measurements going into the future, and the specific extent of those measurements will be determined in consultation with the SAG. And there is a network of air quality monitoring stations around the dunes. This gives us a localized indication of the meteorology and the spatial distribution of PM10 levels around the dunes. And this, the specific instrumentation at these monitoring stations for this year will be determined in consultation with the SAG. And then the UC Santa Barbara continues to do the UAS and drone surveys. And they collect a lot of data, but this one of the primary points is to look at the sediment budget and sand flux in the four dune restoration areas to determine the efficacy of the different projects. And then State Parks continues to do on-the-ground monitoring, looking at percent cover of the dust mitigation projects and then species richness. So there will be more data. A lot of data will continue to be collected to ensure we're using the best information to inform this program. Given that we're currently in compliance, that the emissions coming off the dunes currently are not in excess of naturally occurring emissions, for state parks, we'll be moving into a maintenance and adaptive management phase. And what this means is essentially we'll be maintaining the projects that are out there and adaptively managing as is needed and as the science informs. And the main goal will be ensuring that we continue the emissions coming off of ODSVRA continue to not be in excess of naturally occurring emissions, and the state parks remains in compliance with the SOA. That concludes my report. Thanks.
Any board members with questions?
Okay, Kip.
I had a question. I don't know.
Mr. Eddie.
We saw. Thank you. With respect to that drone site, could you explain that a little bit more? What was the purpose of the drones?
It's the drone
survey. I wasn't clear on that.
Yes, the UAS surveys, and it's looking at the sediment budget in the four dune restoration areas. So, is the sand that's coming in, is it staying in those areas, or is it just bypassing it and continuing to go through the dunes? And so it's looking at the sand flux across the surface. It's looking at the sediment budget in those in the four dune restoration areas. And that'll be expanded in the coming year as well, looking at.
So the slide kind of was on rather quickly. I wasn't really sure. I wasn't able to absorb much. But
yeah.
What was it reflecting as a result of those drone surveys?
We've got the first several years of data, but they haven't. They're still continuing to collect data.
But is it going in a positive direction? Like I said, it was only on the screen for a second.
Yeah.
What did it reflect?
Yeah, it's Walker here. Ian, do you mind if Dr. Walker from UC Santa Barbara speaks further than that?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Hi, everyone. So as John was saying, the drone collects imagery that we then use to create a surface. And then over time, we compare the changes in elevation of that surface. From that, we can capture the red values here, which represent areas of erosion. And then the blue areas represent areas of deposition. The idea here is the foredune is sort of the front line of defense for all the sand, which is, you know, millions of cubic meters per year that's coming in from the ocean blown by wind. Every grain popping in saltation creates dust. So with the loss of the foredunes over time, we've lost that front line of defense. And the idea with the restoration is with the different treatments to at least mitigate or halt some of those sand grains moving, and thus for every particle that's trapped, you have thousands of dust grains that aren't moving on. Over time then, that builds the foredune so we can track these red and blue amounts and assign them per treatment to see which ones are performing best to then serve the adaptive management decisions that park would have to make to modify vegetation or the extent of the covers to keep them performing. We assess performance based on how much sand is trapped over time and the vegetation cover, which John didn't mention. We map vegetation cover throughout most of the ODSVRA, and that's then serving vegetation management decisions in other areas beyond the foredune. So in short, the drone imagery allows us to detect where sand's going, how effectively we're trapping it, and how we can use vegetation or other treatments to continue that efficacy to reduce dust emissions.
So the, in layperson's terms, so the more pinkish red areas that develop, the better?
The more blue.
More blue.
Right.
Okay.
So through the years, you can see there, and those are change maps. You can see in the polygons, the different treatment areas, some treatments succeed better than others. And that's changed through time. As the plants develop, they start to develop little dunes. Those dunes grow, and the dunes start to trap more sediment through time. And so, you know, we're trying to mimic a process that takes decades, and we've been monitoring it since 2019. And to answer your initial question, all the performance indicators are positive.
Okay.
All of these treatments are behaving very well. They're trapping sand, they're developing dunes. The one on the far left, with the little cutout by the washroom there, that is a no-treatment area that we keep as a control site. So there's no vehicle action there, but there's also been no planting. And so that's sort of a control that we compare to all the other treatments. If they're trapping more sand than that treatment, are doing well. And that's been the case consistently through time.
All right. Thank you.
I have a question for Mr. O'Brien. You showed a picture there of a PM10 monitor in the dunes themselves. Do the results from that monitor, are they comparable to the ones at CAL FIRE, for example?
At CDF. We use they show similar results. We use that. The Desert Research Institute develops a meteorological and monitoring station report annually that really that gives the spatial extent of the different PM10 levels. And so it we don't use it necessarily to compare directly to CDF.
But they are measuring apples and apples?
They're measuring PM10. We do have a BAM at one of the stations, an EBAM. Go ahead, dear.
It's not a reference monitor, yeah. So it's not going to give, relative values. It's going to give relative values between those types of monitors, but then they need to be collated with a reference monitor, and depends upon the range at which they're reading, how accurate they can be correlated with it. But it's good for checking on, is it being reduced at these sites? They're cheaper monitors to put in and easier to maintain. So they're not spitting out super accurate information, but pretty good information.
Yeah. Is there more than just the one you had the photograph of?
Yeah, there are 13, I believe. 15.
Have you looked at distribution amongst those 13 to see if there's a pattern of, more PM10 here versus there, just from those monitors?
We've also looked at the, like, going kind of forming a transect, what happens with the PM10 levels as you go down the transects.
I might suggest, if you'd like to talk to Dr. Jack Gillies in the audience, is an expert on these devices.
On what?
On these devices, they're his. So if you...
For some reason, Gary, I'm having trouble hearing you. Yeah. It's you're echoing.
I'm echoing.
It's the room.
Maybe I should stand back further from the mic.
New system, you got.
Is that better? Further from the mic.
Try again.
Hello,
Gary. I think I can. If Dr. Gillies from Desert Research Institute is here, and he can answer more questions about that, the specific details.
Could he?
Yeah.
Hearing Board, thanks for the opportunity to speak. Yes, so the meteorological and PM10 network that we have operational at the ODSVRA from April through to September. We operate that every year. And what we've seen with the data that's been collected through time is that there's a consistent north to south decrease in PM10 levels, which coincides with the measurements of the emissivity made with the Pi Swirl that shows greater potential for emissions in the north versus the south. And then we also use it to look at changes in the PM10 across the maturing vegetation islands to see if there's a discernible effect caused by the presence of the vegetation to affect or modulate the PM10 measurements. And what we do is with this, it's called a MET1 particle profiler. Before we install them in the field, we cross-calibrate them with a federal equivalent method measurement of PM10. So we're trying to get the best measurements we can using a more flexible measurement and cheaper measurement, but we always try to tie that back to the federal equivalence method. So everything that goes into the field is calibrated before and after to see if there's any drift. So they are comparable, and we see the same trends that you saw in the one image that John O'Brien showed. There's been a consistent decrease in PM10 concentrations across or through the years. So what's happening outside the park is essentially being observed inside the park as well.
You mentioned north to south. How about east to west?
North to south is reflecting the changes in emissivity. But from west to east, there's typically the concentration gradients will increase as you have more surface over which the wind has passed. So it doesn't really start decreasing until it gets to the eastern edge of the park and encounters the vegetation and the land surface after the winds have passed over the dunes.
What I was thinking about was essentially a section from west to east, and I would expect that that the PM10 measurements would go up as you went towards the east.
Yes, they do.
Drop off at the edge of the park because of the vegetation?
Yes.
You have that data somewhere?
Yes, and that there is a report that was produced for California State Parks called the PM10 and Meteorological Monitoring Update for 2024. So that can easily be made available.
Thank you.
On the request of parks.
Thank you. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Going on from
Dr. Bauer. Let me try this mic.
Okay.
Is it any better?
Yes. Okay.
We'll use this mic then. Next we'll have Dr. Bernie Burke. Bauer, Burke. I don't know how I got that at. Could you change your name to Burke? It's easier for me to say today. No comment.
Good morning, board members. Good morning, audience. Thank you for showing up and your interest in this topic. My objective today is to give you a little bit of insight into how the excess emission goal is structured and how we reach that that conclusion about SOA compliance assessment. So I'll auger into the details a little bit, and I apologize for that in advance. First, I just want to recognize the members of the Scientific Advisory Group, a really talented group that's wonderful to work with, that have informed this project for quite a long time. So I'm going to start with a little bit of a cartoon version of what we're doing to help us figure out what the logic is. All right. And so here you've got the Pacific Ocean on the left-hand side. You've got the ODSVRA represented as a big tan block. And then you've got a monitoring station downwind someplace, CDF. And the wind blows across the ocean and comes in across the ODSVRA, the open dust, sand surfaces, as well as the vegetated surfaces. And as was mentioned earlier, the wind, if it is powerful enough, begins to entrain the sand particles and they go through a mode of transport called saltation, where they basically hop along the surface. And in so doing, what they do is they begin to take the flakes of dust that are on the sand particles that are emitted into the air. The dust particles, of course, are much smaller, and they can be wafted up into the atmosphere, represented as dust or PM10, as a particulate matter of 10 microns or less. And so it's that dynamic process of saltation and emission of dust across the open sand surfaces that leads to these clouds of dust. And then, of course, what happens is that that dust leaves the boundary, as was just discussed. There are some modifications and changes to the dust clouds themselves. So the PM10 concentrations, and you're absolutely right, what we would expect is the PM10 concentrations go up through the open sand surfaces, and then as we encounter vegetation, they decrease. The complexity for the east-west transects that you're talking about is that we have zones that are modified in various ways, including vegetation zones within the park. So the east-west transects are really complicated to figure out, but conceptually, you're absolutely right. So once outside the park, you know, it's transported by wind, it's moved around, it's mixed, and then eventually we get some measurements of PM10 concentration at monitoring stations downwind, CDF, Mesa 2, and also Flaco. Now, how do we assess the emissions themselves? And this is what we've been focusing on quite a bit. We use this instrument called the Pi Swirl, which was introduced in John's, and I'll talk about that in a second. And the Pi Swirl is run by the DRI group. And they go out and do campaigns, extensive campaigns, and go to different locations within the park to try to find representative locations to optimize the analysis. And so there are transects, north-south transects, east-west transects, and then trying to fill in holes and gaps. And so they put this Pi Swirl down, and they measure in many different locations. And then what has been done, as you'll note in the title of this is 2018 to 2022, the strategy was then to take those point measurements and create a surface, a contoured surface. We call it interpolation or extrapolation, right? So that we know we can predict what the emission or emissivity or the ability of the surface to give up dust is at every particular location, which is important to the modeling. Now, why is this important? Because there's really no good way to measure how much dust is emitted from the entire park. I mean, if you can think of a way to measure all the dust coming off the park, we'd be very interested to hear that. But so we have to rely on modeling. And the models work on a grid network, right? And so I put up a grid network here superimposed on that contoured smooth surface of data. And the idea is to try to find out an emissivity or a value of the emissions for every one of those grid cells. Now, in the model, which is extraordinarily complicated, there are some 200,000 grid cells, right? So it's a huge number of grid cells. They're basically 21 meters by 21 meters right now. So that's how the model gets structured. And now there's actually three parts to the model that you need to recognize. Let me just back up again. The first part is the wind calculations across the park, because what we need to know is how strong the wind is at every one of these grid cells. And so there's a model called CalMet, which was established. It's been tested a long time. It's been calibrated. It's been published on. So DRI runs the CalMet model to get the wind field. Then the Pi Swirl data are used to say how much dust might get emitted from each one of those grid cells. And then there's a third part, which we've kind of backed off on a little bit lately. And that's how this dust gets transported to a particular station. And that turns out to be pretty complicated, and there's lots of assumptions that need to be made, and there's some uncertainties. But the model that DRI has produced actually worked extraordinarily well, and that's available in the published literature as well. But just to point out that wind transport piece, which is formally called advection dispersion, is complicated. Now, what those measurements of emissivity allow us to do, and this was certainly the objective early on, was to identify locations where there was higher emissivity. More dust was being released than in other locations, and those were, of course, strategic interests to potentially mitigate the dust concentration problem. And so there's a green zone there, that circle, which you know might identify the high concentrations, and parks would then go in and isolate that, either restrict riding or put some vegetation plantings there, all right? And then if this is successful,
What happens is the model will predict on the little right-hand side there, the little yellow graph, a decrease in the modeled concentrations of dust at that station, and also the measurements should reflect that. So if the strategy has worked, right, then that's what we should be seeing. And as we'll see from Carl's presentation, that's exactly what has happened is, and what Dr. Gillies alluded to in terms of the decreased concentrations both within the park and outside the park. So that's the conceptual framework. Here's the pie swirl instrument. You've probably seen this before. It's this little annular device. It's basically a cooking pot kind of thing with a little fan blade inside, and it's hooked up to some fancy electronics. The blade itself will spin at different speeds that are pre-programmed. So there's a low RPM, a medium-high RPM, and a high RPM speed. Those get translated to a value that we call shear velocity, which tells you something about how strong the wind affects the surface. And then there are little sensors in there that tell you something about how much dust is being emitted from the surface. Okay, so it mimics what might happen if you get wind blowing across a sand surface at that particular location. These are point measurements, obviously, right? So what do you do with the data? So each one of these curves, they're just three example curves, has three points on them, and those are the low RPM, mid RPM, high RPM points, and across the horizontal axis on the bottom is the shear velocity, that parameter that we use. It tells you how strong the wind is and its ability to affect the surface. And on the left-hand side is the dust flux, okay, how much dust is measured. And so, you know, fancy statistics, we can run a curve through there and get an equation for it. And that then allows us to put an equation into the model for every grid cell that says if the wind is at some shear velocity, we can predict how much dust is emitted at that shear velocity. And as the wind changes, it goes up and it goes down, and we can do this over long periods. Okay, so that's the basis of how that emissions from the ODS-VRI surface are modeled. Now, as alluded to by John, there are lots of pie swirl measurements, right? So any particular location, you could say, well, is that representative or not? But over the years that DRI has been doing this, there have been some 1,500 measurements in different campaigns. They just finished another sequence of measurements in 2024, both in May and September, which will add approximately another 500 measurements to this mix. They have not been assimilated into these the power curves yet, because there's still quality control being done on them. And so there are a lot of data points, right? And that allows us to use the power of statistics to tell us something about what happens at particular locations and the uncertainty boundaries around that, right? The 95th to the 95th percentiles and those sorts of things. So the statistics get much more powerful the more data you have, and we're accumulating a huge data set. That also allows us to begin doing some analyses that tell us maybe something about trends, right? So one of the things, I've got those little red boxes that aren't here, but just to point out that 2013 was an extended campaign. That was the initial one. And then 2019, another extended campaign, which we've analyzed in detail. And those served as the basis of the model results that led up to the 2022 SOA amendments. All right. So we started off with 2013. Then after the 2019 data were collected, we generated another 2000. It was DRI. They generated another surface, right, and did the modeling. And now we've got the 2024. So there are some differences, which I'll come to in terms of how we're approaching this. But here are the outputs, the map outputs of dust emissions for 2013 and for 2019. And one of the things you'll see is that in 2013, there were some red zones, which were relatively highly emissive, and then some blue zones, which were less emissive. Those, over that period of 6 years, were slowly being mitigated and addressed. And so you can see a reduction in the amount of red and the locations of red in 2019. Okay, so there are some successes there that are graphically portrayed right here. Okay, so 2022, there was a revision to the stipulated order of abatement and amendment, and I just wanted to point out a couple of key phrases here in light blue. eliminate emissions in excess of naturally occurring emissions. So we've wrestled with what that means. It sounds pretty straightforward, but when you try to operationalize that into a model, what are naturally occurring emissions? And the second part is reference to a pre-disturbance scenario, which is ostensibly the naturally occurring conditions. And the pre-disturbance part may be a misnomer because we can only go back to 1939, and we know that there was some disturbance on the park at that time, but it's relatively minimal in comparison to the impact of humans on the landscape today, okay? And we need to generate a representative emissivity grid derived from the Peisserell measurements to populate that model. So these are the key differences that we needed to address from the scientific perspective. So let's go back to that conceptual framework that the cartoon earlier. So now we've got that same rectangle, and what we recognize is that rather than doing that gridded surface with all the interpolated values, we're identifying zones, major large block zones. And so we've got four different colors here, just for purposes of illustration. And what we assign to those zones are characteristic emissivity curves, those power relations from derived from the data. And so I've just put up here a riding area, which has a value of 4. The values are irrelevant right now. Vegetation, we're calling 0 emissivity. NRA stands for a non-riding area. We're giving that a value of 3. And then some other areas, which we can talk about later, but they're things like the fore dune restoration area, the plover exclosure, the seasonally exclosed area. So the landscape is pretty complicated. We'll just lump those as other right now. Okay, so there's the contemporary or current landscape, which we can quantify with all the data that we have. Then we identify a pre-disturbance, and we have to change around the land classifications for the zones. And so in the simplest case, what we're saying is that there was no vehicle disturbance, there's no seasonal exclosures, there's no managed habitats, et cetera. So we're going to call them all non-riding area and give them a characteristic non-riding area number of 3. They're still vegetated areas, and those still have zeros. And then conceptually, all we do is we add and subtract, right? And so we get this difference surface that says where in the park is the dust emissions higher than it was used to be, where is it lower, and where is it exactly the same. And in this little scenario here, what we see is it's completely balanced. So in the riding area, we've got a +1 value, which means there's more dust being emitted. In the other areas, we've got a -1, which means there's less dust being emitted in the current landscape. And in the non-riding area and in the vegetated areas, it just completely balances out. So this one balances to 0, but of course that's not exactly what we would expect. We'd expect minor differences. And clearly what this depends on is how you define the zones, how large they are, right? And then how you characterize them with the emissivity curves, how you get those correct values that you ascribe to each one of those zones. So that's the basis of the model right there. The right-hand side shows that it's a much more complicated tapestry of zones that we have to take into account. All right, and so that's what we've done. Looked at all that those changes that have been modified and what existed on the landscape, et cetera. And here's what we end up with. Those are the current zones that we have established for the ODS-VRA, bounded in the blackout marks. And what you'll see is that there are 7 or 8 primary zones and then some vegetation areas. So we've got 2 riding areas, the blues. So there's a dark blue in the north and the light blue in the south, in the sort of the central area. And the reason that we have 2 is the statistical analysis that we did on the Peisserell data has demonstrated that there is a difference in the emissivity from the north to the south, as Dr. Gillies alluded to. We believe, and we haven't demonstrated, conclusively, but we believe that that's related to grain size, right? So the grain sizes in the north are smaller than the grain sizes in the south. That's one explanator. There may be some others, right? But anyway, when we do the statistical analysis, we can demonstrate that there are significant differences between the pie swirl measures clustered in that dark blue area relative to the pie swirl distributions that characterize the light blue area. So they're statistically significant. The same thing with the reddish colors, which are the non-riding areas. So in the north, we've got the Dune Preserve, or the non-riding area north, which is untouched. On the south, we have this Oso Flacco area, right? That's also untouched. And those have different emissivity, statistically different. And then there's that red section, that salmon color in the middle, that is also significantly different. And then there are those other management zones, the Four Dune Restoration Area, the plover exclosure, and the seasonally exclosed areas. And those all have to be treated somewhat differently. A lot of details went into this, a lot of analysis, and I point you to the reference that's available on the APCD website. It's quite a lengthy document. It's about 40 pages, but it goes through all the detailed analysis and demonstrate why we ended up with this. Okay, so when we now move to the pre-disturbance scenario, then they have to be characterized. So here's just example curves. I don't want to belabor this too much, but there's the power curves. The main thing to show is that the ones on the bottom are for the riding areas, the ones on the top are for the non-riding areas and others, and what you see is that the riding area curves sort of peak out the top of the diagram, and so those curves sit higher than the non-riding areas. So the riding areas, based on thousands and thousands of data points, has been demonstrated to be more dust emissive than the non-riding areas. Okay, that's the sort of take-home message from this. And then we've got the parameters for those fits that that go into the model to calculate the dust once we know the wind. So the major changes since 2022 to the model are that we're using these large block zones rather than one of these interpolated grids. Okay, and that allows us to use all the pi swirl data, because in the previous iterations you could only use 2013. Or 2019, or 224, and then you say, well, you know, which is the right one? Okay, you might come to a different conclusion. This allows us to mix all the pi swirl data to get the full distributions of variance that we would see across the years. And we're also doing a little bit more in the statistics. We're using a median as a measure rather than the mean. And those of you who are familiar with how housing markets work, it's always reported as the mean, right? Because you can have one really expensive house within a neighborhood which drives up the average, right? That doesn't necessarily represent what the true value of the houses is. It's the same kind of thing here. The median is the middle value of the distribution. Okay, so that's the more relevant statistic to use. Okay, so how does it all play out? Well, here's the 2024 current landscape. You've got those all those zones underneath, and then you drape over top of that what's called a vegetation mask that was developed by UC Santa Barbara based on 2020 imagery that was the last available at the time. And all the green zones are areas that are vegetated, and they are considered to be zero emissive, okay? All the other areas underneath with the colors have a power relation assigned to it, and that goes into the model to predict how much dust gets emitted. The 1939, or pre-disturbance scenario, looks like this. There's only three zones underneath. There's a different vegetation mass taken from historical air photos, and that gets draped over as well. And then what we end up doing is running the model on these surfaces. And here are the results accumulated for each of the zones. You don't have to spend too much time on the numbers themselves, but just to show you that the 1939 pre-disturbance number at the top is 166 metric tons per day for those 10 highest days that we're that is referred to in the SOA. And the current landscape emits 148. So just to give you a graphical representation of that, that bar graph shows all those numbers. So pre-disturbance on the right, more emissive across that dashed line, 166 tons, and then the current landscape slightly below that. So you've got a buffer of about 18 tons in there right now, with the recognition that we need to integrate more pi swirl data. There are some potential other changes going into the model. There are some refinements that need to be done. So you can expect in the 2025 report that these numbers will change and the relationships will change slightly, okay? But the bottom line from this, of course, is that the dust emissions today are less than the pre-disturbance scenario. And so from our perspective, there is compliance with the SOA at this point. And just, again, graphically, this is what it looks like across the landscape. So this is my last slide, and I'll leave that one up for you to look at and ponder. It shows the pre-disturbance on the right-hand side and the current dust emissions from the contemporary landscape, and showing that the red and orange and yellow zones are all in the riding area. That's where most of the dust is being emitted currently, but it's mitigated by the large blue zones, like the Plover exclosure right now, which has a fairly small emissions number, and same with the Four Dune restoration. And also, the white areas are the vegetation areas. Okay, so those change slightly. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll leave that slide up for folks to ponder.
Any questions from the board?
Just one quick question.
Dr. Lapidus?
When you look at this map, and earlier it basically said the same thing when you had the boxes, the Plover exclosure area now looks to be less emissive than it was in the pre-disturbance scenario. Why would that be?
Yes, that's a great question, good observation. So in the pre-disturbance scenario, there was no equivalent zone, because the Plover exclosure actually has some management interventions. They put in large woody debris, et cetera. It also has a history. So it used to be exposed to riding and was seasonally exposed for a while. So it's been exposed for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years at this point. Leading into the 2022 SOA, the APCO, one of the conditions for approval of the ARWP was to actually use measurements in the Plover exclosure, because before there was an assignment of a value based on what we thought was the non-riding area value. But the 2022 measurements showed that there was a really small emissivity. So that reflects the fact that in 2022 there was pie swirl data measured there, and those were mandated to be used, and that's what's happened in the model. Does that explain it?
So you're saying in the pre-disturbance scenario, there was some disturbance in that area?
I'm not saying that, no. No. I don't know what happened in the pre-disturbance scenario. The assigned emissivity value is the non-riding area average.
We have the modeling results of using the other, and it turns out to be.
Yeah, so, there's the zones on the right-hand side, the pre-disturbance scenario, and so we're talking about that large salmon color in the middle, right? Those all have the same emissivity curves applied to them, because there was no Plover exclosure back then, right? So we're going to have more measurements, right, to try to inform what's going on in the Plover exclosure. And that 2024 data that was just measured like a week ago will give us a better insight into whether those low emissivity values measured in 2022 are characteristic of that area, or whether that was somehow unusual. Okay? All right. It's a good question, though. That's a good observation, yeah.
Ms. Vesely?
Thank you. A few slides back, you had a grid, and you had assigned numbers to the grid based on, I'm not sure based on what, but did those numbers, those relative values, transfer to the zones that you then established?
No. Well, they are incorporated. As I said, the earlier modeling efforts originally was based just on the 2013 pie swirl campaign, and they were gridded and interpolated. Then when the 2019 data were measured, people said, well, let's just update to the 2019 values, right? And another interpolated grid was produced, and that formed the basis of the model. So part of the difference between those modeling outcomes would have been the fact that you're using different pie swirl measurements, 2013 vintage versus 2019 vintage, right?
Can you go back to that grid where you showed the four values that you assigned to it?
Oh, okay. I knew the cartoon would come in handy. Keep
going? Now that one.
Yeah.
So zero, two, three, and four were the numbers you assigned to those based on relative outcomes, relative values. And then the you compare the current condition with the pre-disturbance condition and end up with the chart on the right, which has a plus one and a minus one and two zeros.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you said that that would seem to indicate that things are now balanced.
In this cartoon, yeah.
But it's based solely on the numbers you assigned to those grids.
Yes.
Am I right?
That's true, yeah.
So that you can't really say that that grid on the right indicates that things are balanced at this point. Because
this
you chose those numbers
just,
at
this,
random.
This was just meant to inform you on how the calculation gets done, right? This wasn't to suggest in any way that things are balanced in the park, because what's going on in the park is this table of numbers right there. That's the real version, whereas the previous was just a cartoon to exemplify how the calculations are done.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bauer.
Question?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, I was just wondering if you have any insight into the likelihood of how those total emissions numbers might change as you collect more data.
Well, the preliminary analysis that we've done on the May measurements, which were focused on the riding area, non-riding area, because couldn't have access to the nesting areas, right? So those emissivities are actually lower than what we've seen previously. 2013 was a really highly emissive year. The trend has been sort of even. There's no statistically significant trend in the data through time, but we see some variation, and 2024 sits lower than most of the others, sits lower than 2019, and sits lower than 2013. But we haven't done the full analysis yet, and those will be incorporated into the revised power curves. And they'll make a slight difference, right? So the curves will be slightly lower than what they were, because the measurements now are slightly lower than what they were, right? So that's the trend, yeah. That's what I'm saying, the numbers that we showed, they'll be different next year in the 2025 ARP. It won't be 166 and 148, it'll be something else. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Turn it over to Mr. Woolley.
Good morning again. I'll do my best to do Carl's presentation today. He's got it pretty much in order. So if we could hit the second slide even. All right, so, you know, with this process, we're looking into the Prover enclosure with new testing, because it's like, why is it lower? So that's part of the reason why we're extending the order, to give more time to develop those factors, and we're proposing to extend the order. You know, it's like, why is it lower? Well, I mean, state parks does put wood chips and other things in there that would create roughness that's not in the other process, you know, other areas. So I don't know if they continue to do that or not, but if they do, to maintain that plover enclosure, then you've actually, you know, it would make sense that it's even less emissive than if you didn't ride on it. If it's closed and you're adding wood chips, you've done even more. I don't know what their plans are on that, but that definitely would affect that. So getting on to the evolution of dust controls. So how can we determine, you know, if there's been an improvement in what it is, at which site, where, the many influences on the dunes, whether weather, riders, trash, wood chips. anyway, we'll look at multiple metrics to determine that, because one of them, you know, is not enough. You need to look at this thing from multiple angles in order to corral over it. So what's going on here, you can see from the graph the levels of dust control, how they've gone up in time, and how the last 3 years we're at the same level of acreage, but that we've added more permanent vegetation as we replace temporary sites. So, and that's done some good, as we'll see in these slides. So next slide.
Hey,
That's the next slide. And so with reference to where the monitors are, the evolution of the monitor locations, the next slide. So just to refresh you where the monitors are, you can see CDF, and that's kind of behind the main entrance into the sand highway and into the dunes. And it's by far been our highest, at least starting point, it was our by far our highest emission receptor site, highest concentrations. And then you can see Mesa 2, which is located further downwind, and traditionally had lower levels. And now they're approaching CDF as we try to mitigate everything. They've gone down, CDF's gone down, more so because it was such a higher starting point. But we still see CDF leading the averages. Some days Mesa 2's higher, some days CDF's higher. And that's what you would expect if you're trying to mitigate this thing down to remove all the excess emissions. And then you can see the Oso Flacco monitor down there. And you can see that it's placed similar in inland location as CDF, but it's behind a much more invasive high dune system with a lot of non-native species in there. So next slide. So air quality trends. And one thing we really like to look at is have we really made the effect on these large, dense plumes that we were getting off the, you know, the Mesa, and 600 plus micrograms per meter cubed was not uncommon. Now you can see from this graph, and if you went back further than 2016 or 2015, you would see even some higher days and numbers above 300, but we're just going back to this level. You can see as the evolution of controls has gone out there that our hours over 300 have dropped dramatically. And it continues to trend that way. And this year's even looking better than last. So next slide. Oh, Carl has some animation here. So you can see that the COVID year that was a low year too, and that we have since maintained that level, and we're down 23. You can see from right now at CDF on the one on the right side, you can see that we've had no hours above 300 at CDF from January to September, just that window, the last 2 years. So not all the way to the end of the year, because we do get storms coming up in the fall. Typically we'll get two or three larger wind events, and sometimes they might spring some hours over 300, but right now it's as low as it's ever been. Next slide. And next slide, because I kind of talked the way through Carl's animations. Air quality trends over 300 at the Mesa 2. You can see they're still low, but a little more frequency in 2023 compared to 2024. Next slide. And you can see 2024 from year to date is still lower than 2023, which was lower than 2022, and onward. The next slide. Okay, so comparing rule 1001, which is our dust rule that we're currently not enforcing as we go through this abatement process in lieu of enforcing that. And you can see the number of exceedances from that rule are down to a low as well. Next slide. Okay, so exceedance of the 24-hour PM10 standard, that's 50 for the state, and it's 150 for the federal government, the Fed standard. And wind event days, so what are wind event days? Well, they're when it's a certain direction and a certain wind speed and a certain times. So with that, you can see that what we call a wind event day is the day that's we're going to see some elevated levels of PM coming off of the dunes. So at 3 p.m., the wind speed has to be above 21 miles per hour. And at 1 p.m., the direction needs to be out of the west-northwest or northwest at CDF. Next slide. And so these are just the number of wind event days versus exceedances. Next slide. And so that's the wind event days versus exceedances. And so you can see from this graph is pretty interesting. You can see that they cross where back in 2016, what we would call a wind event day had more PM 10 in it. Then it crosses the axis in 2018, and then we get this differential where we have much fewer exceedances than wind events as compared to before when we had much more wind events than exceedances. So that's a great graph, a great statistic to look at. And then the next slide. And you can see it goes through those deltas that Carl was showing. Next slide. So this is what the San Joaquin Valley dust emitted January through September. And you can see the number of exceedances as at a low, which is we're very happy with this year. Some weather involved with it as well, so you have to tease that out, but it's been a good year, been our best year so far. Next slide. And the final one we're gonna talk about is the differences in difference approach. And this is a ratio of CDF or MESA 2 to OSO FLACO. And how that ratio changes from the base year of 2017. It's also in our annual air quality report on the district website. The difference in indifference model is explained there and the statistical analysis of it. But to look at it, next slide. You can see that it just continues to drop. And that's a big deal. So that means we're making another indication that we're making really good progress. And if we're not at the finish line, we're getting near the finish line. And next slide. And that gives you the numbers up there on the difference in differences. And you can see that at the top of 2023, that CDF's percent change at 38% reduction of that value. And MESA 2 had a 22% reduction. It's not that we didn't get the reductions at MESA 2, it's that we got at such a high baseline for CDF that now that had a much bigger thing to chop down and much bigger denser plume to go after. So as expected, it had a larger percent reduction. But like I said before, the two sites now are pretty much sometimes CDF is higher, sometimes MESA 2 is higher. That's pretty remarkable that we've brought those down to this level. And I do believe as these dunes mature that we'll continue to see, as long as we maintain them and we're gonna put programs in place to maintain them, they will continue to see the reductions as they mature, the heights of some of these dunes stabilize, get higher and stabilize, provide more shelter, provide more roughness. The vegetation gets denser. Some things in our modeling right now assume zero in some vegetated areas. Well, they're not always zero, but they're going towards zero. So it's good estimation. And maintaining them, and if they're fully vegetated with mature vegetation, they are zero. But the vegetation isn't matured all the way yet, so we're approaching zero. And that's why our numbers are so good with the plants growing well out there. So now we just have to make sure we maintain those vegetative islands over time. The last slide I'm not going to go over. It's a wind power density. Bernie, did you do wind power density? John did. Yeah, John did. I was writing some notes down. So the last slide is the wind power density. We already saw this. Basically, the effect of emissions with the wind, the power of the wind, how much force is the wind putting on the dune surface, and it's continuing to go down with the same amount of wind power density. So that's great. Okay, so this is a little timeline. State Park submitted their first draft. We had comment letters from the SAG and APCD. Second draft was submitted, SAG comment letter as well. We provisionally approved this current plan for workshop on the 17th. We're holding a public workshop today. Going to gather input from yourselves and the public, and then I have 7 days to issue a final conditional letter of approval with anything we might add during this hearing. And in your packet, there is a proposed conditional, you know, the conditional letter of approval that we, provisional letter of approval we put in there is the basis of it, and there'll be that plus whatever else we add as a result of this workshop. Okay, so we kind of talked about this today, that there is a, right now we're showing, modeling that we have excess tonnage reduced. However, that can change next year when we put new modeling results in, because, not modeling, there's new testing results from the Pyrrhus testing, because that can change, you know, that the total input into the model. And so we've done some other looks at, and we believe that the model would still predict compliance even if you back the plover exposure down to a non-riding area emissions as well. So we're in good shape right now. Now we just have to prove that that it's going that way, it's going to zero, and that our modeling inputs are sustainable and repeatable. And that's why later on we'll be asking to extend this order out so that we can have time to prove what we've done and actually watch the reductions in air quality at the monitors and at the communities go down as it matures and we refine the process, refine our mitigation strategies inside the closed areas. And next. So on conclusions, we have all these metrics show continued improvement with downwind air quality, even as the mitigation footprint remains stable. And 2024 is looking good so far. You know, based on the difference in differences approach and other things, we, regardless of whether or not we had some large wind events, some 100-year wind events that can happen and skew 1 year from another, we believe that looking at these ratios of what we would see before from CDF to Oso Flaco or from Mesa 2 to Oso Flaco gives us a good point to know that, hey, yeah, that windstorm was out of this world and it's a 100-year windstorm. And, you know, that's things are going to move. All dunes will move in a 100-year windstorm. So, you know, like I said before, we're looking to do some model refinements, mainly with the input from the emissivity measurements and put in the new plover estimates and see how that goes. And so with that, we'd be happy to take any questions or comments from the board and then to the public.
Gary, could you go back to the Rule 1001 slide that where you talked about where we are relative to Oso Flaco? Not the percentages, but the absolute. So CDF, this is as of when, where it says exceeding CDF greater than 20% above. Oh, that's just a rule.
Yeah.
Do we have data on where we are, let's say, this past year relative to Oso Flaco? I know the percentages are improving, but the absolute where we are in terms of exceedances relative to Oso Flaco?
Oh, yeah. And that's the number. That's the number of violations on that bottom bar. Are you talking about for 2024?
Is that the rule or is that the number? This is the rule.
That's the number. That's the number of violations of the rule that you exceeded the
for the rule.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, over the past few years, do we have the numbers that show how many exceedances relative to Oso Flaco we've actually had?
Oh yeah, there's been a few Oso Flaco, so you could just subtract out the Oso Flaco numbers. We do have those. They're not in this graph, but we do have those numbers. They're a handful. Under, you know, so if this number is, I don't have it with me right now, but I could look it up. Carl would have it on the tip of his tongue.
Oh, there they are on the graph.
Yeah. Thanks, Bernie. I thought I got that across, but I probably mumbled through it. What I was trying to clarify is I don't have the exact number of exceedances at Oso Flaco of the standard, but those are the numbers that of violations of Rule 1001.
Okay.
Mr. Andrews?
Yeah, Gary, I think you kind of skipped over Mesa 2 graph. Could you go back to that? I think it was.
Are you talking about over 300?
No, I think it's further on in your presentation, right before your conclusions. There, the one up above, number 15. No, that's not it. Maybe I just misunderstood where you were showing the trends. Showed the trends for CDF, and then there was a chart that was Mesa 2.
Mesa too, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Okay. So Mesa 2 is showing the same trends.
Yeah.
And I had a second question, and that is, have you looked at whether the pandemic year 2020 provided an opportunity for the system to kind of reestablish itself? And to what extent has that been affected the future, the more recent years, post-2020? Does that make sense?
I don't know if we could. We haven't been able to tease out what long-term effect 1 year would do. When did we put in the Dr. Jack Gillies?
Yeah. I mean, if you looked at the graph, there was a significant reduction in 2020, 2021. And then there was a continuation of a lesser reduction in 22, 23.
Yeah.
Is if we didn't have that full year of allowing the system to reestablish itself, would we have had a continuation from the higher point versus that continuation from the lower point?
So in we did take advantage of the COVID year to look at that issue. So in 2020, when the park was OHV activity was suspended, we saw a dramatic reduction in the levels of concentration of PM10, both within the park and downwind of the park. And we were surprised at how quickly those numbers reduced with the cessation of OHV activity. The converse is it responds equally quickly to emissivity coming back increasing once you allow the OHV activity to be reintroduced. So it was a surprise to us, and there's a paper that is available that describes the COVID year as a means to one of the ways that we actually were able to determine that there was the physical impact of the OHV activity clearly affected the emissivity and the emissions from the park. But once with the reintroduction, it's on a monthly change will occur. We could see it going down by month, and equally it recovered to pre-COVID conditions very quickly.
Thank you.
And if you're interested in more details, I can make sure you can get that information.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. At this time, we will receive public comments specific to the presentations we just heard. If you wish to speak on this item, please complete a green speaker slip if you haven't already done so and give it to the clerk. I currently have 5 speaker slips. Public comment is limited to 2 minutes. Speakers that can address their comments in a minute or less will be asked to speak first. Minutes cannot be ceded to another speaker. And for those who planning on testifying today, if you could please stand up and take an oath. That'll be read from the clerk, please.
Mr. Chair, we don't need the oath until we get to the hearing item. We're we're still on the we're still on the information session.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead and accept the public comments in. We'll start off with Chris Sorensen.
I am Chris Sorensen. I'm a resident of Napoma Mesa, the Trilogy Development. Been living in the Dust Plume for over 10 years. I concede, just from looking in the sky, that dust is down these days from where it was before, and I'm grateful for that. I'm an engineer, so I understand modeling to some degree, and I understand its value, and it's the old adage, garbage in, garbage out. But I believe that the science people here have done a good job of collecting good information. So I think it's showing us something real. Well, I'd like a clarification, and maybe the board can ask this question of them. My understanding is the modeling is predictive at this point. It's an estimate of what will be once the mitigations have been completed. The vegetation is matured. So there's a component which is estimating the future value of the vegetation. The pie swirls are modeling the condition of the surface at the time the measurement's made, which is now. But the presentation said this is the current level of total mass emissions. If it's not current, it's what's currently predicted. That's my understanding. Now, if I'm wrong about that, I'd like to be corrected on that. So my point is what's going to be happening going forward through this maintenance and adaptive phase that we're going into to continue this process of looking at what the effect of the mitigations is going to be, is. So there's this continuation of the analysis, I presume, that has to happen to see whether or not what's been done, because it's now a matter of nature taking it and the state parks keeping what's been put in place there and effective. What are they going to do in this future phase to assure that that's happening and to continue to understand what the actual emissions are, given that you can't really measure the emissions, you have to continue this modeling process, presumably, and update the data as you go on. So that's my question. And then the second question is, what can be done to correlate the emission reduction to the PM measurements so the public can look at those and say, yeah, it's still working? There's no definite criteria anymore. We're not using 1001 as a rule, and we know there's going to be some natural level of exceedances. What can we expect that to be on average over time?
Thank you. Next, Jim Sudi.
Good morning, Jim Sudi, President, Friends of Oceano Dunes. 2 minutes is not much time to go over an hour and a half worth of data. But at a high level, let's talk source versus path. Dr. Ian Walker talked about the millions of cubic pounds, I think is what he said, of sand being dropped on the beach each and every year from the ocean. And Dr. Bauer gave this simple cartoon showing this big block representing the Oceano Dunes. And the ocean, just this little squiggly thing off to the left. That's the problem that we've had throughout this entire process, is we've negated and ignored the source of the ocean. The source of the ocean provides sand onto the beach to replenish. The ocean is a source in that. The Oceano Dune is a path. We see down at the CDF, we monitor salt, direct alien transport from sea spray to the monitor, because the salt is not staying in the sand. So if salt can go straight from the ocean to the monitor, so can other elements. What we don't know with all the vegetation that's taking place is what's reduced. All they say is PM10. They don't say what. Is it just collecting ambient water and salt? If so, those are natural. We're punishing the users of the park to the point it's unbelievable. They've closed half the park. And funny, you got half a reduction, but you don't know what. So there needs to be more studies done at the water's edge to see what's directly coming from the ocean, because it is a massive source. There's been a lot of discussion talking about the reductions over time. There's other things that have been taking place. This is a very complex issue. We went from the worst drought in 2008 to the levees breaking here in the later years due to the rain. Significant rain, no mention, not at all. The oil refinery, which sits right next to the CDF and ahead of the Mesa, is closed. Well, it went through a slow reduction of its use.
I'm sorry, your time.
Oh, I'm sorry, you didn't interrupt him. So I think more needs to be looked at. Thank you.
Rachel Toady.
Hello, Rochelle Toady, and I'd also like extra time if I run out. I'm just going to try and get my main points. I'm here representing Concerned Citizens for Clean Air, and you have a letter from them and an email from myself personally. On one of the charts, it showed 166 metric tons of PM coming off, or dust coming off the dunes. And then it showed 148, which is after the mitigation. But it never showed how many metric tons are coming off Oso Flaco, where there's a non-riding area. I also was confused about, was the non-riding area included or not? Because in part of the SOA, it says it was not included to date. But on one of the charts, it showed it was included at one point. As far as the Concerned Citizens letter, we had five bullets about the Four Dune Project. The presentation answered two of them. But there's still a question of when is that Four Dune Project going to be complete? And how far along are we to that completion? And has it been successful or not successful? So I don't recall seeing any measurements about Four Dune Project and the reduction of PM since it's been closed for 5 years. CCCA would like to see the SOA extended because we feel there needs to be more validation of the modeling. Garbage in, garbage out is a phrase I'm familiar with also. And let's see, I think I got it all in 2 minutes. All right, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Rick, any questions from the board? Comments? Okay. Item number 6, we'll proceed to a hearing to consider the Air Pollution Control Officer's application to modify the terms and conditions of stipulated order of abatement, case number 17-01, in the matter of California Department of Parks and Recreation, Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Division, Oceano Dunes State Recreation Area. And would it be appropriate this time? Any yeah, people?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tim McNulty, by the way. I'm the counsel to the hearing board. So this item is different than the last item, even though the subject matter is pretty much the same. This is a hearing on a proposal to modify the SOA. And because it's a hearing, we need to swear in anyone who's going to present testimony. And the way we usually do that is to have the clerk offer what the oath is, and when people come up to the podium to speak, they can just say, I accept the oath. And that we're doing this because it's a requirement of the state statute that governs the way hearing boards operate.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and proceed. Item 6A, APCD application to modify stipulated order of abatement. 17-01.
Are we doing the oath now, or?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead, Alyssa, if you don't mind.
The oath is as it reads. Do you solemnly state under penalty of perjury that the evidence that you shall give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? If each member that is providing testimony can approach the podium and say that I do before providing your comments, I will start the speaker timer after that.
Okay, I think we can proceed.
I accept the oath.
Good.
No one else? Okay, we'll proceed with the. Okay, so at today's hearing, although we are currently modeling compliance with the proposed goal as shown in the ARWP presentation, the goal needs formal approval by the hearing board. That is in the order. So the goal not meeting the goal. That's in the order. So we have to make a finding that we had presented what the goal was, a change into the mass rate versus, the grid cells and whatnot. And so part of it will be approving that in this process. And then we're proposing to extend the SOA duration so that we can work on the emissivity inputs of the areas and make sure that it's not garbage going in and doesn't change as much. To prove the modeling is the modeling input is stable enough so that, you know, if we don't go in and out of compliance one way or the other, it's, we don't expect to vary a lot, but we do want to make sure that before we go into some other kind of an agreement that the hearing board is assured that we are showing compliance consistently as we test from year to year, because there will always be some testing inside these areas to ensure that we haven't increased emissivity with traffic pattern changes and things like that. So part of this modification is to allow this hearing board to, in the future, say, yeah, it's stabilized. We don't need to be in the process anymore. You can come into a side agreement, whether it's a mutual settlement agreement with Rule 1001, and making a settlement that will do such and such in lieu of enforcing that, or an outside agreement, completely if it's an enforceable document. But that would be beyond 2028 if this board chooses to, approve that they've mitigated the nuisance at this point. And like I said, and I also put that to allow the hearing board to make a final determination of the excess emissions have been mitigated and to make some minor adjustments and clarifications in the order.
Mr. Chair, if I can just add, so on the website for this hearing item on the APCD's website, there has been a copy of this proposed amendment or modification to the stipulated order of abatement. And today, your clerk handed each of you a paper copy of it, and you can see the proposed changes would begin on page 3 of that, and they're on pages 3 through 5. They're spelled out exactly how the existing SOA would change if you were to adopt this proposed amendment to it.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Willey, would you like to go over the proposed order to modify?
Yeah, I could go over it. I kind of just gave you a summary of it. Let me grab it here. So, we're proposing, first of all, when you look at it, there's some whereas clauses in there that have been modified. We talk about utilizing the SOA in lieu of taking enforcement action pursuant to the Health and Safety Code for violation of Rule 101. And that's just to make clear that why we have this order, that's what the current APCO is doing, is not enforcing Rule 1001, but indeed using this abatement order process to accomplish the same thing. And we also put some language in here to maintain the long-term dust maintenance operations. And then the findings section on page 2, this is where you approve what the goal is, that change from to that mass-based goal. And then we also wanted to put in here in those findings that the initial modeling results show that the ODSVA is not in excess of naturally occurring emissions. And therefore, it may be appropriate for state parks to move towards a long-term maintenance and adaptive management program to remain in place with the stipulated order as modified. That's that proving period that are these inputs remain the same? Is our emissivity measured out there remain the same and rerun the model and to verify that we aren't, you know, going up and down. We don't have some years where the emissivity spikes. So we've gotten a lot of data. We just figure we need some more because, like in the area of the plover enclosure, we don't have nearly as much data for that area. We're getting it now. The problem is the window is set. You can't get the data until October to March. So you're forced with using those time periods because you can't get into the plover enclosure where the plovers are there. And going over the conditions of the order, and the first condition one just outlines it's going to be extended until December 1st, 2028. The second proposal extends the term as well and gives the final compliance date. It changes from before that, you're basically saying you had to get approval for the goal, and now it says you have to get approval that, you know, that it's actually been met, the goal has been met. So that's the proving time period. And number three, the changes were date specific. Number four, date specific. And number five, the scientific advisory group, some language has been changed there so that as this process winds down, we can decide, you know, how many members that we need in the future versus the past efforts where we've, you know, needed a lot more expertise. So that allows us to modify it together with the state parks, myself, and in consultation with CARB and the SAG chair. Any modifications would be done on based with their recommendations as well. So not just state parks and APCD deciding to do that. And actually, we're taking input from CARB and the SAG chair. And other than that, it's pretty much standard. So it's not a heavy revision, but a needed one.
Okay. Chanders?
I have a question, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time. I think it is. And that is, Mr. Chris Sorensen and myself at the last hearing board meeting raised a question about a SAG recommendation with regarding the correlation between model PM10 mass emissions reduction and measured PM concentrations. And I know the APCD has not recommended that be done in future work plans for the SAG or in this order. And I would not like to lose that issue. It provides the opportunity for the community to have a harder number that they can relate to rather than end of the year modeling conclusions. And the SAG has indicated that they feel they can create this correlation between the modeled emissions and a specific numerical number, as I understand it. And I would just like to make sure that this committee considers that because it's going to make it so, so much easier for the community to understand if violations are taking place or not. And it also makes it easier and much less expensive for the agency to enforce. So perhaps, Gary, you can give us some insight into that and the agency's position.
If I'm getting you right, you would like to have some kind of a number like if it exceeds 70 it shouldn't exceed 70 micrograms or per meter cubed, or what number are you looking for? A concentration at the monitoring station?
I don't know. Maybe we could have Representative the SAG comment on that recommendation. I know it was included in last year's report.
Either Bernie or Bernie can have Jack talk about it.
I I'm not exactly clear on which recommendation you're referring to because we've generated so many memos, but I think your question is about creating modeled PM10 concentrations at CDF and Mesa 2 based on the emissions work that we're doing relative to the measured, right? And that has been done previously, as I mentioned, and that's also been published using the data and the approach prior to 2022. Now, it showed a good relationship between the modeled PM10 concentrations and the measured PM10 concentrations. I will say, and I sort of alluded to this, that that part with the wind transport is extraordinarily complicated modeling, right? The emissions part is relatively simple. It's basically some arithmetic. The model is the CalMet model, the wind model, which has been verified, is used extensively. And then once you have the wind across the landscape, the emissions is just an accounting procedure. It's not really modeling, right? But then when you get that dust in the air and you transport it, right, there are myriad processes that mix it, that carry it, that dilute it. There are multiple inputs that come from the sides, from the top. You have to characterize the surfaces across, and you have to know something about the intervening surfaces between the park and the monitoring stations, which we don't have access to because we can't go on private property and measure pie swirl, et cetera. Jim Sudi also alluded to the fact that there are some inputs potentially from the ocean side, sea salt. We would disagree that all the salt only comes in from the ocean. I think there is a fraction that resides in the sand itself. It gets deposited there. But that's captured by the pie swirl in any case. So the point is that the modeling is exceedingly complicated, right? And we have rejigged some of the model elements right now. And so we would have to go into a wholesale change of the modeling component to get to that PM10 concentration. That's not a trivial task, both scientifically and also financially. Really expensive to do that work. You require supercomputers pretty much to generate all the models with all the grid sizes, et cetera. And then the question is whether you've parameterized all the elements of that correctly. And so our engineer in the audience, where is he there? He would agree that there are so many variables that you need to put in there to verify what's going on in terms of mixing and advection, et cetera. So I certainly understand that that would be a really good parameter. I mean, ultimately, that's what we're concerned with is the PM10 concentrations at locations downwind. Because those are the ones that have the health impacts, right? But it's a very, very difficult and expensive process, which is why we're going to a much simpler approach, just looking at the mass emissions from the park. Does that explain things? It's kind of an out, right? But it's really complicated.
It was my understanding, though, that the SAG actually recommended additional work on that issue.
We suggested that, you know, it not be dropped entirely. So I think it's a point, you know, potential future investigation with the caveat that I just mentioned that it's A, uncertain, and B, very expensive. And as you all appreciate, the California state budget is not in the finest shape. And so what you're asking for is a big financial ask, right?
And what is that financial ask compared to ongoing modeling for multiple years? It's costing
I'm not privy to the details of contracts with DRI and UCSB, et cetera. But I would say it's, you know, you're going to be talking about $1 million. You know, it's not going to be, because you have to populate it with things. You have to have a whole bunch of effort going into it. You need data sets that you either have to acquire in the field, or if they're not in existence, we need upper atmospheric layer wind. We need wind from, you know, different places, from Vandenberg, et cetera. You know, if you're going to include all this stuff, it gets very, very complicated. So the emissions is straightforward. Like I say, it's mostly an accounting process, right? And we have the pie swirl data. We know what's coming off the surfaces, the wind. So there's no mystery about that part.
And then at the end of the day, whether the model aligns with the data maybe is irrelevant because you actually have the data. You have the measurements at CDF, at MESA 2, at Oso Flacco. You know what's going on, right? And that's really the proof of the pudding, right? And all these trends, they're moving down. They're moving in the right direction. And, you know, the adaptive management phase that Park is talking about now is to maintain that, which is why the extension for another 2-3 years to continue to monitor, continue to understand what's going in some of these areas that we don't understand particularly well. And then I think to address the earlier question about the predictive part of it, all models predict, so I don't differentiate, but Parks is absolutely committed to maintaining, you know, the status quo as it is today in terms of these zones and making sure that the vegetation cover is robust, and that we do assign the proper values of the emissivity curves to the areas. So there's a committee. We just had a long conversation about that yesterday.
Okay, thank you. I think the work that's been done is extraordinary scientifically, and also the work and mediation at the park. What I'm just looking for is not losing sight of the opportunity to give the community a firmer number, if that's possible scientifically, and to figure out at what point is enough refinement enough, and is it possible just based on all of that scientific work and effort to pick a number that is protective of public health to the extent possible, and then work from that going forward without having to continue to expend extensive sums each year to continue to refine a model and a process. So I just hope we don't lose sight of that and that potential. But thank you very much.
Yeah, that, if I make one more comment, you're absolutely right. But I think the actual data collection at CDF and MESA 2 and Oso Flacco tell you the story that needs to be told ultimately. And that's the thing to keep your that's the ball to keep your eye on, right? As long as those parameters begin to look good, we reported out on all those specific parameters, some more complicated than others. But if you just think about Rule 1001 violations, it's gone from 60-something violations down to 10-ish. Some of those, there's nothing you can do about anyway. They would occur in any case. And we've talked a lot about Rule 1001 and have some real questions about the control site at Oso Flacco that's being used, because when you looked at those vegetation maps, it's almost all nothing but vegetation in front of the Oso Flacco, and it's all invasive species, and so it's not a particularly good control site. So you're maybe overestimating or you're over conservative about what should be happening using the Oso Flacco control site, right? So 10 exceedances at CDF relative to Oso Flacco, in my mind, is remarkable given that you've got an open sand surface in front of it. So what's the right number? I don't know. Is it 10? Somebody in a higher pay grade will make that decision.
Mr. Chair, before the speaker,
for the record, is he needs to accept the oath.
Yeah, thank you. I was just
I accept the oath.
Thank you.
Can I ask you a quick question about that Oso Flacco? Yeah. I know we've heard that before about Oso Flacco kind of being a different scenario. Do you know how Oso Flacco's situation compares with a pre-disturbance scenario in terms of vegetation, pre-disturbance scenario for the ODSVRA?
Yeah. Could we pop my presentation back up really quickly? It's actually, if you look at the vegetation maps, the Oso Flacco area as well as the North Dune Preserve have more vegetation on it currently, right? And so there would have been more open sand surface, more disturbance down there. So you could argue that the 1939 pre-disturbance scenario actually produced a better version of, let me get back here. There you go. So you see all the pink on the right-hand side? That's all open sand surface in the 1939 image. It's almost all completely covered up with vegetation now. A lot of invasive species have come in, right, that ought not to be there. And so that's why, you know, if you think about measuring downwind from that lower triangle thing, where's the dust going to come from, right? There's hardly any open sand surface there, right? So that's why
it's a real thorny, the structure of Rule 1001 using a control site is good. You know, that's something we would do with drug experiments, et cetera, have controls and, you know, multiple groups, but you're picking one site which is supposed to be representative somehow, and you really don't have a location that is representative, right? So it's a good idea, but in practice, it doesn't work particularly well. So that's why I say 10 exceedances. You know, look at that. It's actually quite remarkable. Thank you.
I just wanted to say I agree with Mr. Anders wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I guess I've been troubled. The work has been extraordinary, I think, and the data look great. But the ultimate goal here was to improve air quality in an effort to protect the health of people who live downwind. And right now, there's no air quality metric in the SOA, so we don't have an air quality metric that we're looking for. So I guess the question, similar to what we've been talking about, is do we have or can we define an air quality metric that is a goal? Do we have an air quality goal? What are we trying to achieve here? Can we put a number? Can we put a metric? Can we put together something? Because we're defining emissions, and we're saying we want emissions to be below a certain number. And we're doing that because we think that will lead to better air quality. But when are we happy about the air quality that it leads to? If we don't have a goal, if we don't have a stated metric, how do we know we're happy? There's been a reduction, there's been an improvement. There are less exceedances than what were relative to Oso Flacco, which may not be a perfectly validated measurement or method of comparison. But how do we know when we're going to be happy if we don't have a stated air quality metric?
Is this directed towards me? Since you're looking at me,
looking at you.
Okay. You know, we really can't, because it's dependent upon wind speeds. I mean, I guess we could come up with something that would approximate, okay, if on a wind speed day of wind power of certain amount, you know, it shouldn't exceed so many micrograms per cubic meter over the of a 4-hour period or something like that. It'd be incredibly complex because you really couldn't put, you know, like a hard number because nature doesn't go by hard numbers. So we may be able to come up with some other ratio provision that we would decide that, you know, some ratio with Oso Flacco to the monitoring site needs to be at a certain level, the ratio of the concentrations, something like that. But, you know, in 100-mile-an-hour hurricane-type winds that could happen with climate change come through, and the wind patterns could change, and you're not going to get there. You're going to have to do something with those dunes. It's unnatural to keep them from wiping out. So, you know, it's an incredibly hard thing to have a concrete number. We've looked at it, and it's not really there because of the variabilities of wind. But a ratio would work, and certainly over the next few years, this board will have a direction over this for the next 4 years, and it's your purview to modify the order and ask for changes along the way. But right now, we're seeing just fantastic results of everything trending down, 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 down as our mitigations mature. So it's behaving really well. But if we do see a problem, I could see that, you know, maybe we come back to some other metric like that, but it wouldn't be my recommendation. I would keep what we're doing right now. It's if it hasn't gotten it all, it's got most of it. So, you know, there's inherent problems living in next to natural sources. You live in certain areas, there's going to be more dust pollution, more pollen pollution, more roadway pollution. This, the natural component of it, we don't have a control over that. And there will always be a natural component. And Oso Flaco has no activity, massive amounts of non-native species, very steep dune drop-offs that give it, you know, a very low emissivity potential, right? And it violates the state standard a handful of times a year on its own, even in non-super windy years. That's my guess. I mean, I think over time, I mean, if we can think about maybe having some kind of a ratio, if this board is not satisfied by 228, then we can go there. But I'm banking on the continued development of these dunes and the vegetation maturing, and we're replanting things that get wiped out and with better species, and continue to see that emissivity drop.
I'm just wondering if we could ask the SAG to at least look at the and report back on the feasibility of creating a more enforceable number that might represent an average or something. So that we don't lose it, not ask them to spend the expensive process of developing it, but ask them to report back on the feasibility of doing something like that. Would that be possible?
Maybe have Tim opine on that if we.
Oh, yeah. I think it's certainly within the range of things that the hearing board could ask for. I don't know if there's a budget for it, there's no legal reason why you couldn't ask to have some estimate made of what it might look like to prepare that. I mean, remind the hearing board itself has no actual budget. So it's really the Air Pollution Control District that is going to decide how and when if it's the APCD's cost. I don't really know, but I don't think there's a legal reason why the hearing board couldn't ask to have this number prepared for it to be presented to it at some point in the future. So
yeah, I mean, you could basically give me direction for the next hearing to come back with some kind of a proposal or a process. We have a number of years while we watch these mitigations mature to come up with something, but we could certainly put that in our task list for the next meeting of the board.
To pick up on that same train twice now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that we got to this point because the residents of the Napomo Mesa came to APCD and or the county and said there is a health problem with where we live because of the dust coming off of the dune. And using the measure of the state's air quality standard and the federal one, which are based on health issues, if I understand them correctly, we have developed a process for analyzing this whole system, but we've used a proxy of measurements of PM10 strictly as the number that we're looking for. But I agree that what would be beneficial for the public would be able to say what we have done improves air quality to this standard, and that we can see that standard continuing on, because that'll give us some indication of health measures, health improvements, and the public's understanding of what we've done. With all due respect to SAG, too many details. Was it the note, the line from Amadeus? Too many notes. It's what we need is something that can be understandable and you know, absorbed, embraced by the public.
Mr. Chair, we probably should go to public comment before we have too much more board discussion.
Say that, yes. Actually, accepting public comment, we'll first go to Karen Sudi.
Just as a reminder, please accept the oath before you start your comments.
I do accept the oath. My name's Karen Sudi, and I'm with Friends of Oceano Dunes. And I don't think you can have, an accurate air quality matrix until you have an actual inventory of all the dust emitters from around the MESA and the CDF monitors. It's been about 12 years since we've begun this process, and we still don't have an accurate inventory of who all the dust emitters are. Mr. O'Brien stated that the current emissions are not in excess of naturally occurring emissions. So I don't understand why we need to continue with the stipulated order of abatement. State Parks has done a good job of getting us to this point, and we need to trust the process that they can continue to do so. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Lawrence Schinderman.
What was that term?
Accept the oath.
Yeah, certainly. Let me get a second here. I was at the Cal Coast Commission years ago in Morro Bay on this very same topic. So here we go again. At that time, I literally kicked a can down the aisle as an issue was not going to be resolved but studied yet again. So here we are again, more studies. So again, here's my can. I will not kick it down the aisle again. One point came out of that discussion today, and I stood out and said about COVID. When COVID came, data went down. It went down dramatically. When the people returned to the dune, the numbers went up again. So it's kind of, at least in my mind, I'm not a scientist, seems like the data, we can see what's causing the dust to a large degree. And this last one about a particular number, and I like the comment, everything will be all right in the end. If it's not all right, it's not the end. So at what point of time do we say we've reached the point of where the data is going to justify what we want to hear and say, which is valid for good health? And that's my point. And I'll take my can. Thank you.
Thank you. Thomas Ryan.
I take the oath. Okay. My name is Thomas Ryan. I'm a resident of Napomo Mesa. And I have a few comments, and one of them is I don't think we can be over conservative on public health. I think it's a very important thing. And as far as your budgetary costs, I think a surcharge at the off-road park would pay for the extra modeling costs, since those are the people who seem to be a big part of the need for the extra modeling. Another comment, I said, what about PM 2.5? That is the smaller particle that's going to kill us. I don't hear anything about that, because that is the more destructive piece of dust. And I want to say that, unfortunately, State Parks has never embraced the compliance with the abatement orders. Rather, they have used a number of excuses to thwart the complete compliance. And residents of the surrounding areas are appalled by the lack of the compliance by State Parks. I feel the health of California residents should be the primary reason for strict compliance, not the discretionary recreation of a few Californians. Residents of the Mesa adjacent to the Oceana Dunes Park are pretty much disgusted with the administrators of the state parks. And I feel you do not fight the abatement order, but rather embrace it, because it's for the benefit of the public. And there needs to be much more vegetation throughout the area to make the wind off the OSVRA healthy to breathe rather than unhealthy. We need zero violations of Rule 1001. Thank you.
Sir, thank you. Jim Sudi.
I accept the oath. Jim Sudi, President of Friends of Oceana Dunes, quite a few comments. First, let's talk about some of the history. Remember, this development downwind of the Oceana Dunes was signed off by the APCD. This was known as a windy, dusty environment. They built homes. Now, that doesn't mean we should ignore the concerns, but there are no known health issues related to the elements coming downwind, as identified in Dr. Lynn Russell's Scripps report, talking about the particles measured and what they contained. I also want to thank Dr. Bauer. You articulately pointed out the argument we've said about the Oso Flaco control site for a decade now. And that control site has been a problem. We've raised it many times. We've been chastised many times, but it is what it is. And your comment about salt in the sand, a decade later, shouldn't we know? The gentleman that did the pie swirl measurements, we have it on videotape. We asked him about it. He said he did his own personal sampling, did a salinity test, and found no salt in the sand. So why don't we measure and look at what's in the sand? Now, about the abatement order, we've been moving the goalpost. The requirement has changed and changed and changed. It sounds like I'm here and want to make another change, make more firm rules and guidelines. And we can't keep moving the goalpost. All right, so the emissions have been met. And Mr. Willie says in the slide, with significant buffer. So the SOA should be ended. If you need another contractual thing to hold state parks' feet to the fire, that's a different contractual item, MOU, whatever it is, but the SOA itself should be ended. Thank you.
Thank you. And Michelle Toady?
I take the oath. Rochelle Toady from Concerned Citizens for Clean Air. And what I wanted to express to you is that the document that you're being asked to approve, to me, seems to say mission accomplished. And I do not agree with that, and I don't think many residents agree with that. And when we were talking about the state exceedances at CDF, I believe there's 15 so far this year, and 3 at Oso Flaco. Now, I do understand about the vegetation at Oso Flaco, but that location was picked by state parks and the APCD. I'm not sure about SAG. They may not have been on board. In their own presentation, the map that shows 1939 compared to 2023, it's still lower on their maps. So it shows red areas still, which are emissive. And again, we don't have any idea how many metric tons are coming off of the Dune Reserve and Oso Flaco, north and south of the riding area. How many metric tons of PM are coming off daily? It could be much lower than 148. What if it's 100? Then that means that the modeling is off somewhere, and we won't know that if we don't keep studying. So in conclusion, I do believe you need to extend the SOA, but I don't believe you should say this level of, we've met the goal because we changed the goal in 2022, and it's all based on modeling. I don't know. It seems very iffy to me. Thank you.
Thank you. We've had lively comments from the board. We will go to any further board member questions and comments.
I have a question.
Petus?
Gary, what happens after the SOA is completed? How is this monitored after that?
Like I kind of mentioned it earlier, the process would be under a mutual settlement for violations of Rule 1001, because Rule 1001 is still out there. The only thing that was struck down was the permit provision of Rule 1001. So there's some misinformation out there about the Rule 1001 is not enforceable. It is. It's just due to difficulties and starting this process, difficulties of enforcing Rule 1001 through our process, we went to the hearing board, and that's where we sit right now. Well, after we get this done, then it'll be easy to come into some kind of an agreement, a settlement agreement that, hey, you're in violation of Rule 1001. The air patrol officer comes up with a proposal, says, well, if you agree to do these things and maintain, you know, maintain these islands and this process of retesting, basically the same thing we're doing under the order of abatement, but we'd be doing under a compliance agreement. So it'd be up to the current air pollution control officer at that time to develop an agreement so that they can meet the goals of Rule 1001, even though we have the issues with not getting an exactly great base case, because as we show with Oso Flaco, it's when the process we've looked for in Rule 1001, we looked for some sites that could be good reference sites, control sites, and there wasn't any of them that were super clean, because both to the north and south of the riding areas, there is non-native species. And the Dune Preserve has mammoth, high, steep to the north, four dunes that block a lot of wind. And to the south, you know, we have all this non-native vegetation with additional four dune structures. So try to find a control site with Rule 1001 is very difficult. Due to legal issues, modifying the rule is very difficult. I'll end up back in court when we modify a rule with this in it. Don't want to go there. Coming up with a mutual settlement process for an air pollution control officer and state parks to enter into is a better solution, in my opinion. I will not be the person there. I'm going to retire next year, so this is not, it won't be me. It'll be someone else in my stead. But that's the path that I had laid out would be the final path. When this board, mind you, this board has to decide that it's in a place to do that. And if we were there, then we would put this agreement into place, and then this board's jurisdiction could end.
So are you saying, do you envision that as this, after three more years, when this, assuming everyone agrees that it's time to end the this program, that there would be some sort of written document or written agreement that,
yes,
would say every subsequent year this will be looked at relative to 1001 and modifications may be made as necessary?
Yes. And in addition, this board could get involved again on its own. It can, on its own motion, you know, we can have annual meetings. You can ask for a report, take a look at it, not be under an abatement order, and decide you want to go back into an abatement order. So there's a lot of safeguards out there. It's just not going to drop, but you can always pick it back up as well. And I don't think the public is going to let it drop if it's not being taken care of, one way or the other, either through Rule 1001 or this board coming back into being. For this process, then that's what will happen.
Any other?
I should just wanted to note that if you were to adopt the proposed modifications today, it would extend your authority over this SOA until 2028. So with regard to what happens at the end of that period, it's not an immediate concern. It's probably something that we should, you know, talk about more if we have additional hearings over the years. But this calls for an extension of your jurisdiction until 2028. And I don't know if, Gary, does it call for a automatic hearing every October, or does that have to be called? Is it, do you remember?
I think it has a hearing. It has a workshop hearing in the fall. I think I switched it from October and changed the language, if I remember correctly. And that being that, the process of what we're doing now doesn't necessarily have to be the same thing, because as we're not proposing typically new mitigations, the timing of the hearing, and getting a decision that has to go through Coastal Commission isn't necessary. So a lot of the timing of dates and stuff in there is based upon being able to get Coastal Commission permits for different processes. But we're not in a realm of that. We have the areas that we need that they can access without a Coastal Commission permit. So, and plus we believe we've got the acreage that needs to be controlled. It's just how we're controlling it and what we need to do within it.
So, Mr. Chair, I just looked at this, and if you look at the proposed stipulated order of abatement amendments on page 4, in paragraph 4, there's an amendment to section 7, and it says that in the fall of each year through 2028, the hearing board, upon request by the chair or any two members, may convene a meeting to receive additional update on the report. So that's what you'd be moving to if you adopted this language.
We are. That's a similar provision. It just says October now. And currently, we've been having this workshop together with a hearing board meeting because it makes sense. And so it continue to make sense. That's what we'll do.
Mr. Fessler?
Thank you. I have one sort of procedural question. If we approve this today, does State Parks get a chance to approve it? Or are they required to approve it?
No, I think if you approve this today, the next step is for the APCO to approve it. And I think he does that within the next week or two. Is the
ARWP? We're talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. So if you approve this today, then it will be imposed upon State Parks. So I believe that there's already been discussions with State Parks about the language here and there.
Yeah, this language is agreed upon with State Parks, and we have State Parks, the Deputy Director of OHV here, who can attest to that.
It's in the form of a legal document presented to a court. Does that mean it has to be approved by a court?
You are the court in this process.
Okay.
Quasi-judicial body, and it's your approval by motion. And
I do have some questions about it, if I may. In the whereas section, it says respondent intends to transition to a long-term dust mitigation maintenance operations. Are they under any obligation to do that currently?
No, they're generally under that obligation. That particular one, they just wanted to make clear that, you know, to their constituents that they believe they're in the zone, and make it clear that they're transitioning into, like, we're not proposing new areas right now. We think we have enough under control. So right now we're trying to adapt and replace things within those areas and watch them develop further into a mature dunes with vegetation.
So as of, if this is approved as of 2028, the hearing board and you have no further jurisdiction over the state parks on this issue?
Oh, we still have Rule 1001, so we have a lot of jurisdiction through that. I still have enforcement of Rule 1001, which is more stringent than this order of abatement due to the fact that it's using Oso Flaco as its control site. And, it's not in a native state. There, you can't find a place that native state places are within the riding area, the four dunes and stuff like that. The rest of the coast is pretty much non-native species now that the sands were shifting and, you know, either oil companies or tourists or landowners brought in these non-native species to halt the movement of sand.
Nonetheless, the wording in the document is permissive. It's not requiring them to do anything. And there's been a history. Another question I have about the document, it says that we will approve the modifications. And here it is. The hearing board approves the final excess emissions goal proposed by the respondent. We approve that by this action, if we approve this?
Yes, it's a finding in there. We had to find some place to put that because the current order requires you by today to approve that, what the goal is. You know, we had some questions when we talked about it the last go around, and we put that stop guard in there to make sure that the goal was defined better, and we do have it defined better now. And so now we're asking for your approval of the goal, that mass-based goal that we're looking at. So that's part of that process. And as far as the the statement on the initial modeling results, the last one before the public hearing section on the findings. If you want to have that struck, and you can just strike out that this is your document. I'm proposing for you anything that on this document that's in there, you can take out or add. So, I mean, if that's a proposal that you want, if you're uncomfortable with it, it functions just as well without it.
A couple other questions. I have some confusion, I admit. On page 3 of your staff report, it says the modification also requires that state parks obtain hearing board approval of the final excess emissions goal by October 16th, 2024. If I'm not mistaken, that's tomorrow?
Yes.
Is that also something we would be doing by this?
That is the very statement that we were talking about on the findings.
Say again?
In the order. So.
Yes, you would be doing it by adopting this finding that's in the findings section.
And like I said before, the very last paragraph that starts with initial on page on line number 9 on page 3 of the proposed stipulated order of abatement, you could propose just, you know, omitting or striking lines 9, 10, 11, and 12 from the order. Make that motion if you so desire.
Along the same lines, on page 5 of your staff report, second paragraph says, as discussed in the 2022 ARWP, the revised modeling indicates that the ODS, whatever that is, emits less dust today than it did before significant vehicular disturbance. For this reason, no new mitigation areas are proposed. A little further down in the next paragraph, it says that so the district cannot at this time find that State Parks has achieved compliance with the air quality goals of the SOR. Am I missing a major indication there of why those two things seem to be in opposition of each other?
That has to do with the required further modeling and further emission testing that we are looking at for stable inputs. So right now the model is showing with the inputs that it's in compliance, but we have to verify the inputs of the model, and that's another reason why. You know, if they're not in compliance, they're very close. So, however, we're taking this cautious approach of looking for more robust emissions data, and that's the testing that's occurring or just has occurred in the Plover area. That's an area, a key one, that we want more data from, because it's right now it's modeled to be less than emissive than other non-riding areas, and we want to know why. We want to make sure that's true. We have limited data in that site compared to other sites. So that's a primary push right now. And one reason we can't say that they've met the overall goal yet, they surely could have. And, you know, it's a high probability. But until we get more data to verify the emissivity within the Plover enclosure, we can't really make that determination until we're satisfied with that. It's kind of a...
So how do we reconcile that with the statement that modification also requires state parks obtain a hearing board approval of the final excess emissions by tomorrow?
That's a stopgap. In other words, you have the authority to keep going or change the target somewhat if you feel it's not appropriate.
Is anybody else confused about that? Okay, I'm confused about those issues, but I'll stop there.
Any further questions or comments?
Can I add one thing on it? So there's a nuance between, you know, the final one. In other words, you're satisfied that the inputs to the model are, you know, we've done testing for a few years and the Plover enclosure is indeed that low and it's maintaining that length. And so you can make that final determination that, yeah, it's real. It's got there. So, and that's the difference. I know it's confusing, but it, at least it gives you a chance to agree with the data that we've collected to show that, you know, the emissivity of these areas are within a range that can be maintained.
In both sentences, it talks about goal, air quality goals of the SOA versus final excess emission goals. Are they different goals?
Which document are you talking about?
In your document, page 5, third paragraph at the bottom, so the district cannot at this time find that Parks has achieved compliance with the air quality goals of the SOA. And then on page 3, it says modifications also required that State Park obtain hearing board approval of the final excess emissions goal by October 16th.
Yeah,
talk about the same goal.
I think the difference is in the SOA, you're agreeing to the goal, and in the staff report, you're being told that the goal hasn't yet been achieved. I mean, I think that's what it is.
It's exactly.
If you look at the language in on page at the bottom of page 2 in the proposed change to the SOA, you're adopting the final excess emissions goal. And the staff report is just telling you that at this point in time, they can't conclude that the goal has been met.
So, in other words, we're approving the basis of it, and the other is proofing that the data that goes into that is steady and real and can be maintained. In other words, it just wasn't an anomaly what we put into the model. We have a lot of data in it, so we're fairly confident in it, but there are some areas that we wanted more data in it. And so as we gather that data and present it, we hope to be able to convince you that we are there by 2028.
Thank you.
So based on our previous discussion, can we also propose that we want to try to include or define an air quality goal in addition to an emissions goal going forward?
I mean, I think you can just direct me as, you know, as the staff of the Air Pollution Control District to come back with something. We can work with the scientific advisor and give you something or give you some reasons why we can't do it. Next year, like I said, we have, it was designed to give you time to let you know that we're not done with this process yet, but you can see we're making tremendous progress year after year. And it's not easy. there is an infinite number of variables in this process. So it's a whack-a-mole game.
I think in particular, you know, we had a discussion about that we don't know what the cost of it would be, and perhaps if the hearing board would benefit by having someone present, well, here's what we think you want, and here's what we think it might cost, and here's where we might get with it for our next hearing.
You know, I mean, as far as comments towards the annual work and annual report and work plan, I could probably place some requirement in there that, you know, that we have some presentation on possible alternatives. But I would, you know, I think we can do that just on our own without putting it inside of an order or general direction.
I agree. It would be a separate motion from the board. It wouldn't need to be part of this amendment to the SOA. Yeah.
Any further questions or comments?
But at this time, I'll accept a motion to approve the proposed order to modify the stipulated order of abatement.
I'll try my luck. I would propose we extend and modify the stipulated order of abatement, as more particularly set forth as items 1 through 7 and the subparts therein, set at pages 3 to 5 of the proposed order to modify as was prepared for this hearing. However, I would suggest one modification to that, and that would be that we strike the second sentence of item 2B, which states, by October 16th, 2028, in consultation with SAG and CARB, the respondent shall obtain hearing board approval that the approved excess emissions goal has been met. So I'd suggest that sentence be stricken as part of my motion. That's 2B right here. My motion is that sentence is stricken from items 1 through 5, I believe. Items 1 through 7. Otherwise, they're incorporated.
And rationale?
I don't think I'm comfortable banking that statement. That's my...
So, Mr. Chair, in the existing SOA, there is a requirement that by tomorrow, October 14th, 2024, the respondent obtains hearing board approval that the excess emissions goal has been met. This was extending that for 4 years.
Also modifying it.
Yes. Modifying and extending the goal. Mm-hmm. And if you... if you were to do as Member Reddy has proposed, there wouldn't be a point at which the respondent would need the hearing board's approval that the goal, that the emissions goal had been met, because you'd be removing that. For what it's worth, I think that's the effect of the proposed amendment.
Currently have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'm not completely understanding what we're doing here. Item 2 says section 2A, 2B of the original stipulated order of abatement are modified to read. What are they modified from? So what changes are actually being made?
As part of the packet that you received today, there is the there is a copy of the original SOA as well as the two prior amendments that have been made to it. And I think working backwards, we could see what 2A and 2B have been. Maybe not. Do you have a...
This is the original SOA.
Okay. This was proposed. Can we put these up? Is that possible? Well, it's, yeah. Why don't can you put each of these up or no? No. Okay.
Got a copy of the new one, but not the old one. We didn't know that was what you were handing out. I didn't know. Thank you. Got it. Thank you.
There's a long history with those changes, so.
So the proposal in the in today's proposed amendment to the SOA, so if you were to adopt what has been put forth by the staff and the state parks today, it says that it's amending 2A and 2B of the original stipulated order of amendment. And the original stipulated order of abatement. The original stipulated order of abatement is on the screen now, and it's on the left-hand side, 2A and 2B. Originally, 2A said that the term of the plan, the particulate matter reduction plan, would be for 4 years from adoption by the APCO, and that the plan would be designed to achieve state and federal ambient PM air quality standards. That then, I believe, was amended. No, that's proposed to be amended as part of today's action to the language that's that Member Reddy referred to at the top of page 4.
Tim, it was amended in the 2022.
Yeah.
It was amended.
Again. Oh, sorry. Okay, I'm sorry.
To go to the 2022. And you could
that's my confusion amended. Too. It was already amended.
And the current amendment just changes the date.
Okay.
2022 amendment.
Thank you. And so the 2024 date was put in, and now Member Reddy is proposing to not have any date, and as opposed to having the backstop of the 2028 date.
A question of clarification. So the original stipulated order was amended in 2022.
Yes, it's been amended twice.
So this is just a restatement of the 2022 amendment?
It is a revision to the 2022 amendment.
Why is it necessary?
It's not the exact same thing. Right now, that it has the time period. The jurisdictional time period is longer in A, and in B, we go from you're approving what the goal is, and in this modification, you're approving the goal has been met in 2028. You'd be making that determination. So the difference is, in 2022, we said the hearing board wanted some verification about what we were doing and how this goal was going to change. Well, we came back, we presented data last year, and then this year we had to get approval for the data that we're going to use the method of mass emissions based. So no longer do we need approving that goal. Now we just change it to proving the goal has been met in the future, that we have to get your approval that, yes, the reductions are real, they've occurred. The retesting has shown that the emissivity is not dramatically increasing or causing it to be out of compliance. So that's the changes to it. It goes from what is it to did you meet it?
And we have a motion. Do we have a second for the motion? Let's see, I'll go ahead and second it.
Well, can I just ask, what's the thought process behind dropping it?
I would say, believing that we have a level of comfort with the level of activity and confidence in the modeling that is going on so far, I think we do have the backstop measure of ongoing monitoring and modeling of these locations.
I think it just confirms flexibility. What if they don't obtain this board's approval by October 16, 2028? Why should we put something up, a standard that they may not be able to reach? We're going to try to make this something that works, something that can be adjusted. That's my thought process.
We have a motion and a second.
We have a motion and a second on the floor, so I think that we're ready to take a roll call vote. So the motion has been made by Member Reddy, and the motion is to approve the proposed modification to stipulated order of abatement case number 1701, with the exception of striking the second sentence of Section 2B, which reads, by October 16th, 2028, in consultation with the SAG and CARB, the respondent shall obtain hearing board approval that the approved excess emissions goal has been met. That sentence will be stricken. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Motion is made by Member Reddy, seconded by Member Johnson. Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Reddy?
Yes.
Member Vesely?
No.
Member Lapidus?
No.
Member Anders?
No.
Motion fails 3-2.
We're open to a alternative motion.
Well, I'll move that the order to modify the existing stipulated order of abatement as written be approved.
Second.
I'm sorry, was that you calling for a second or was that you seconding it?
I was asking for a second.
Okay.
And it does not appear that we have one. So
okay.
I'll second it.
Oh.
Could you restate the motion?
I move that the order to modify the stipulated, the order to modify the existing stipulated order of abatement be approved as written.
Motion is made by Member Lapidus, seconded by Member Reddy. Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Reddy?
Yes.
Member Vesely?
No.
Member Lapidus?
Yes.
Member Anders?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-1.
Now we'll proceed to item 7, public comment on matters not currently on the agenda.
Can we just go back? If we want to discuss about the, defining a
usability,
air quality metric, would this be appropriate time to talk about that, or we need to make a motion about that, or how do we proceed with that?
I think it's appropriate at this point to propose a motion to direct staff to come back to you with whatever it is you think that you might like in that regard.
So I would like to make a motion then that staff work on developing an air quality metric that we could include in further evaluations of how we're complying with the order of abatement.
And that we come back to you next year with in the process with a...
Do we need to wait that long, a full year?
Sometimes these things take a lot of time. I think because of the jurisdictional time frame, I think that, and the fact that we're seeing these downward trends, I think it would be appropriate to give us time to go through and come up with a solution. Either that or having another hearing board meeting.
But we can have a meeting if the chair decides to have one or two members.
Right. Correct, at any time.
Right.
Pick a date.
So what if we did it in 3 months' time from now?
I'm having open heart surgery on November 4th, so I will be out for a while. I have a aortic aneurysm, and it's going to put a Dacron hose in me, so I'd appreciate a little more time.
What kind of time frame would be necessary for that and the SAG to be able to kind of respond?
I think, we could probably have one June time frame, maybe March. We don't have a lot of extra staffing at the district, so in budgetary time, it's a little hectic. So, and we'll be recruiting for a new air pollution control officer at the time as well, as I'm on my last 10 months or so. So I would hope that we just did it in the fall with the, you know, with the normal course of things. But if you want to have another meeting, June is probably a good time frame.
Maybe you put one together as soon as you can, and you provide it to the members of the hearing board, and then based upon the contents that we have the ability to set a meeting with two members or at the request of the chair. You know, if you put something together and it turns out it's something that is not truly feasible, then we don't have to worry about it. If it is feasible, something we want to discuss, then at that point we can set it for a hearing rather than putting a hard, fast date based upon what you're going to be going through and the fact that there's going to be a changing of the guard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be appropriate. We would definitely, you know, we could definitely get it done by the next hearing board meeting in the fall. But if it needs to be done sooner, then if it's desire of this board to do it sooner, we'll get on it as soon as we can. But, you know, process-wise, people have other contracts and jobs and things to get done. So I don't think it's going to be a trivial task.
Mr. Chair, I just note that anything that would go to the hearing board would also need to be made available to the public at the same time. We don't want to be having a meeting outside of a meeting. And I also wouldn't want the hearing board members to be commenting among themselves as to whether or not they liked what they received or didn't like it. I mean, it does sort of raise some issues that way. We're probably better off either having a meeting or not having a meeting than trying to do something that would be practical but maybe get us into a little more trouble.
So what if we said 6 months instead of 3 months? And I'd certainly like to get this done before you retired, because...
Well, that's one of us.
Well, logistically, the new officer may take some time to get up to speed. It might just delay things.
So, I mean, maybe April of... Some available weekend in April of 2025?
Yeah.
From a sequential time standpoint, if we requested a feasibility analysis of, you know, what would be necessary, is it possible? If so, what would it take? And you provided that report in April.
Yes.
And then the board could respond as to whether that was something they wanted to pursue or not. Would that provide adequate time for you to build that into the work plan for the following year?
If we actually modified the order to include that as a metric, because first we would have to include it as a metric. So we're changing the metric, so it wouldn't have time. So you would have to go through and approve and change it. So I don't think it would be. Then we have to get it done. So I think it's it could be a multi-year process involved with it. But given us changing it and having us develop it, right? So I don't think we're going to come up with something without extensive modeling and other research to do. So we propose a concept and you approve the concept and we come back with a proposal.
Yeah, as I see it, we're not
kind of a workshop
metric.
Meeting.
We're asking the SAG to give us feedback as to whether this is even feasible or not.
Yeah, and we certainly can do that. But it wouldn't be placed in the order yet if we did basically had a workshop and directed them, because we have to find out what the milestone is before you put it in there. I would recommend if you did something that you just had a workshop meeting to discuss it in the springtime, the concepts and what it would entail, knowing that you have jurisdiction until 2028 by approving that. So...
I think we're getting way into the weeds on this, and I was thinking, since number 8 on the calendar, selection of the date for the next hearing board update on progress of the activities called out in the stipulated order of abatement we just extended, why don't we just say that it's going to be presented us on that date when we select it? Seems, because we're kind of going around and around here, we know we're facing a lot of concerns in the immediate future. We are going to be choosing a date to address this. It would make lots of sense just to have that addressed to us on the feasibility. Then we're not going to risk violating the Brown Act. We're not going to have those issues that you've raised a concern about, Council. So that would be most comfortable just saying, why don't we suggest that? Ask and we'll agree to be put on the date we choose under number 8 and see if we can get on to number 7 before we have to take this up in the afternoon.
I'm sorry, have you made a motion?
So we do have a motion. We do not have a second. The motion is to direct staff to develop an air quality metric to be used in further compliance with the SOA the way I understood it.
And maybe could we amend the motion to say and present it to us at the next hearing board date on progress of the activities associated with the stipulated order of abatement we just extended? Is that okay with the movement? Then I'd second that.
We have maybe a comment from someone from the SAG.
Vote on the motion. And seeing as how SAG is potentially involved in this issue and several members of SAG are here, I would ask for clarification on precisely what it is that you're after, because right now it is not clear to me at all. There are metrics already, many of which were presented today. So there are standards, the air quality standards, California and federal standards that you need to meet. There's the Rule 1001. Those provide standards by which you operate under. The metrics, of course, are the measurements at CDF Mesa 2 and Oso Flacco, which were presented by Gary today. We see PM10 concentrations going down. We have a metric that DRI has developed, which is the total PM10 divided by total wind power density. It's a complicated one, but it takes into account all the data, shows a downward trend from 2013 to the present. We have number of exceedances of Rule 1001. That's another metric. We have the number of wind events to control on those things. So a number of the metrics by which you judge progress are already in place, and all you really need to do is pick one, right, and say 10 exceedances of Rule 1001. That's okay, or 15, or 5, or none. Right, so I think the metrics are all in place, and I'm not sure exactly why it would take longer and who would be responsible for proposing more metrics, unless you're going to tie it to the earlier comment from Mr. Anders about tying it back to the modeling, right? And I would again caution against the modeling, because that's not the real data. You have the measurements. All you really need to do is pick a metric that suits you. So more clarification on what it is that you want would be really helpful to the SAG in our future deliberations to help you out with this. Thank you.
So I'm just basically looking for a suitable metric. They're all available, but they're not part of our plan. So I'm looking for a suitable metric, for us to identify a suitable metric that we think is a reasonable metric based on all the modeling that we've done, and based on our, you know, the situation at the dunes. So that's the issue. There are multiple possible metrics. I think we need to pick one that's suitable for us and live with it.
So I do have a motion and a second. The motion, the way I understand it, please correct me if I've got anything wrong, Dr. Lapidus, motion to direct staff to develop an air quality metric to be used in further compliance of the SOA and present to the hearing board at the next scheduled meeting. Are we ready for a roll call?
Yes.
Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Reddy?
Yes.
Member Vesely?
Yes.
Member Lapidus?
Yes.
Member Anders?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Now we will go to public comment for matters not on the agenda. Is anybody who... Oh, okay. Mr. Sudi?
Jim Sudi, Friends of Ocean Dunes. I don't know if I need to do the oath again or not, but all right, fine. I'm requesting more data. So over the years, we've raised many concerns, and we've heard some of the things talked about today. We've heard that the grain size north to south is different. PM10 concentrations north to south are different. So there's sand migration that occurs, whether it's coming down AG Arroyo Grande Creek, deposited in the oceans, blows inland, Santa Maria River from the south. There's a lot of internal play that occurs. And where I was going with the not knowing the source of the ocean and what it contributes, it can mislead the data that we're receiving downwind. Example, let's say we have a saltation process, PM10 particle is measured downwind, lands on a roof, lands on a parking lot, wherever it is. Rain flows it, goes down to the AG Creek, it's back in the ocean to recycle straight across. The probability of all that might be low, but we don't know. We would like to have a monitored ocean's edge, water's edge, so we can truly understand what is the ocean contributing. And the reason being is salt goes straight from the ocean to the monitor. We can argue if it's in the sand. Let's go measure the sand. Let's go see what's inside. The Pice World measurement can have a sampling filter applied. I already talked to the guy. And it can measure what it's reading. So not just PM10, but what are the particles it's collecting and reading? How does that compare to the air monitor downwind? There's a lot of sampling and data that can be going on to refine the model, to refine what we see. Because if the ocean is producing more and the dunes is just a path, that changes things. And we don't know, but we keep punishing the park and the users. Thank you.
Actually, if I could request of either Mr. Willie or possibly the SCAG member, about Mr. Sudi's comments about having monitoring on the, let's assume, at the water.
Well, from my perspective, you're chasing something that, you know, we could put one there, but we have monitors north and south of the riding area. They're affected by ocean spray. There's somehow to think that Oso Flaco is somehow isolated with its higher winds and salt contents is not really there. It's very hard to operate reference monitors in that wet, extreme wet environment that's right at the ocean's edge. So we've got data a little ways in, and we've got data further out. So, I mean, you can talk to the state parks if they, if you considered, have you put placed any monitors near the ocean's edge? John or Ronnie?
We don't have any monitors right at the ocean's edge.
Yeah.
We do have monitors along the foredune, which is pretty close to the ocean's edge, but it's not right there.
Yeah, and so, you know, within probably 100 meters of the ocean's edge. So we know what's there. It's not an issue. We've gone over this over and over again. It keeps being brought up. There's a lot of papers out there. And there's one paper you can pick from if you want to, and some people seem to, that is not agreement with all the other data and research and seems to defy some common sense, if I can put it that way. So
Yes, sir. Please do.
Thank you, and I'll try to keep this short. For years, we were told the Oso Flaco control site was the perfect site. We argued and raised the same concerns. For years, now we're hearing similar concerns and constraints. We're raising this issue. Here it is, we're asking for more data. So there has been a longstanding thing that's been occurring with the APCO and the APCD. Previous APCO claimed that silica was coming from dunes and causing silicosis downwind. People were going to die from silicosis. Claim without facts or data. They tested. They proved that it was wrong. Claim, oh, the ocean's not an issue. No data to back it up. Let's put a monitor there. We've spent $25 million to date. We're talking about spending almost another $4 million. We've closed a park in half, and we've restricted it. And we're asking for more data, and we're nonsensical. Science is about arguing the data, the positions, and getting to the truth. I've never seen a scientist turn down data.
Thank you. We move on to number 8, selection of date for the next hearing board update on progress of activities called out in stipulated order of abatement, case number 17-01. Ma'am?
What are the dates that are open?
So typically, we schedule our next hearing in October, so we can go ahead and schedule that date for October 15th of 2025. However, if the board so chooses to schedule a date earlier, we have options April 16th, 23rd, or 30th.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to point out I probably won't be here from sort of mid-March to mid-May, if that affects your decision as to when to set a meeting or not. But I've got a long-term plan to go visit my son, and I can't change that. So
mid-May?
Mid-March to mid-May, yeah. So I'll be back around May 15th at that time.
Alicia, would we have a possible date after, say, May 15th or so?
There's a lot going on in May for us. June is probably.
I'm looking in June. We have our regular APCD Board of Directors meeting on June 18th. June 25th is the only Wednesday that's available. We could look at other days, too, if that's beneficial. Like Friday, June 27th.
Would the board consider a tentative date of, I'm sorry, June?
There's June 25th and June 27th, Wednesday and Friday. I don't know what works better for other folks.
I'm fine with October 15th, but I don't have a problem with the fall meetings.
Why don't we at least peg the October 15th of 2025?
Can we look at June 25th or 27th?
You can schedule them both if you'd like. The motion could be to schedule the next meeting to be June 25th, 2025, and also schedule the fall meeting on October 15th, 2025.
Can you say that again?
Yes. So the next meeting would be scheduled for June 25th, 2025, and the fall meeting would be scheduled for October 15th, 2025. But I would need somebody to make that motion officially and then second it.
I move that we schedule those two meetings, one for June 25th, 2025, and one for October 15th, 2025.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Roll call vote. Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Reddy?
Yes.
Member Vesely?
Yes.
Member Lapidus?
Yes.
Member Anders?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
That we conclude our hearing today. Thank you.